is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
It's Friday. You know what that means? Friday before a home game. On the calendar of John Murphy shows, this is always a big day and a fun day. Welcome to you on the radio, on the TV. Happy to have you with us here for the next 3 hours as we get set up for the Bills and the Oakland Raiders. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Donald, I was at a function here in Orchard Park last night. I probably had three or four people at this small function tell me how much they like the show, how much they like you, and that they watch and or listen every day. Isn't
they
that
watch
amazing?
And
you know how you do this? Are you into this yet? You do the show and you think, it's just me and Donald. And
yeah.
A couple of friends stop by and chat.
Yeah.
You don't really think about, oh, my goodness, there's people watching
there's
and
people
listening.
Watching. Until we get the tweets.
Until, yeah, yeah. Until you, know, you,
I'm
until
out
you make a mistake.
You know, the funniest thing is, yeah, until you make a mistake.
Then
yeah,
you find out how many people.
The funniest thing is when I'm out and people will say, man, are you Donald Jones? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, I knew I recognized that voice. And that's the weirdest thing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I understand it. You know, there are certain people that I've always listened to on the radio, and you would recognize their voice. But it's just a weird thing.
It is very weird. And it always hits me on Fridays when we get ready for the games, how many people are I'm not saying they're hanging on our every word, but I think people come to us looking for information and a little bit of entertainment. And I think people come to us on a day like today thinking, all right, game time's coming up, a couple of days away. I think
ready.
People kind of get excited, right, when they hear our show
yeah,
on Fridays.
By the time Friday is here, everybody's making their plans for Sunday, and, you know, they're in the grocery stores trying to get all their food and everything
yeah.
ready. We got a meal prep so we can get ready for Sunday. They're in the beer aisle.
Some of that, yes. I understand there is some consumption.
There's some consumption. So, yeah, it's I think everybody's pumped up. Everybody is getting ready for this game. It's a big game for this team and the Oakland Raiders.
Absolutely.
It's a big game for both teams. And I don't think on the national level it's being talked about as a big game. But if you're here and if you're in Oakland, a fan of either one of these two teams, you understand how important this game is.
And as we talk about the feedback we get from listeners and viewers, I have to say that one woman last night said, I love the show. I wish you would look at Donald more when you're talking to him.
Look at me.
Yeah, she said, you're always looking down at your computer. I know that I am, but I'm trying to figure out where we're going next.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not being rude. You understand that?
No.
She was like, why don't you look at Donald? I said, because typically I'm thinking, where do we go next? What's the next phone call? What's the next segment? What are we doing next?
She wants you to glaze into my eyes.
That's not going to happen. But it's not. I said it to the woman last night. Of course, it doesn't mean I'm not paying attention to Donald. I am. I'm multitasking, and the multitasking involves looking ahead. What's coming up next?
Being in that seat,
I'm doing it right now, as a matter of fact.
It's a lot different than being
over
here. Like over there, you actually have to lead the show, and when you might ask a question, but you're already thinking about the next question
yeah.
and where you're going next. It's different being over there.
It's different. I'm not saying it's hard. It's certainly not brain surgery over here
right.
or over there, and it's fun. But you do have to kind of have a sense of where you're going.
Exactly.
It's like when you're driving with your friends and talking, and you'll turn and look at them, but you can't do this.
Right.
You know? You can't do that. So
listen.
I am listening. Just so you
know
the viewers and the listeners, I am listening to Donald, and I'm also thinking about where we're going next. I can't take my eyes off the road. Okay. Once in a while, I will.
Yellow brick road.
All right, welcome to the show. We have a good one. As usual, on Fridays, we are jam-packed with all sorts of radio entertainment. Coming up in the next few minutes, we'll get you updated on what's going on out here at One Bills Drive. Bills on the practice field as we speak out there at New Era Field. The regular Friday routine now, I believe, for home games when they're playing at New Era Field, they're going to be outside on the practice field practicing, and I know that's where they are right now. Practice should continue for another 35, 40 minutes or so. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Mark Kelso makes his regular Friday appearance. The color analyst on the Bills Radio Network will join us in studio at 12:30 to talk about the Bills-Raiders matchup. 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell, the executive producer and one of the co-hosts of NFL Matchup from ESPN and from NFL Films. He's always got fresh, hot takes on the Bills, their opponents, the NFL. There's a lot to talk about around the NFL today.
And we can talk some matchups. I know that's what he likes to do, and talk about some matchups for the games coming up. We can start, obviously, with the Bills. What's the key matchup for the Bills? Because we're going to talk about our keys to the game, but he might have something different as he watches countless hours of film on every team, you know, so it'd be good to talk to him about that.
Greg Cosell coming by at 1 o'clock today, coming up at 1:30. Going to talk with a longtime sports writer for the Dallas Morning News. He's the guy who compiles the special teams rankings at the end of each year. But he also talks about the Pro Football Hall of Fame for the Talk of Fame Network. He and our buddy Clark Judge and Ron Borges from Boston. His name is Rick Gosselin. Perhaps you've heard his name. The reason why he's coming on is because Cookie Gilchrist is going on the Bills Wall of Fame on Sunday at halftime, the great Bills fullback of the 1960s. Rick Gosselin, as part of the Talk of Fame Sports Network, authored a post about a week ago. State your case why Cookie Gilchrist is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration. We know he's going on the wall on Sunday. What about the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Rick Gosselin has some thoughts on that. He'll be joining us at 1:30 today. Coming up at some time, speaking of the Hall of Fame, our buddy James Lofton, who is here in the building, probably actually overwatching practice right now. He's a Hall of Famer, former Buffalo Bill wide receiver. James said he'd try to stop by, so I can't give you a time on that. Have you ever met James?
No, I've never met him. We had him on the show.
Yeah, on the phone. Yeah,
on the phone. But I've never had him. I've never met him, and obviously we never had him here on set. So I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully he can come in.
Yeah, he's got meetings. You know, they do the production meetings with players and coaches. He said when the meetings are over,
really
I'll stop.
That doesn't matter. We can.
Well, actually, CBS is paying his salary this weekend, so he probably wants to go to the meetings.
Okay.
James, we hope, stops in. If he doesn't, we'll see him Sunday. Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown coming up in the 2 o'clock hour today. You feel like you got a score to settle with Lorenzo,
that's right?
Huh?
We got some things we got to talk about. I might yoke Lorenzo up like Ndamukong Suh did
Ryan
Mallett last night. Yeah,
it's all in good fun, right? You guys are good.
Oh, yeah.
Are good.
Yeah, we do that every week.
I'll see if I can get that going. Maybe I can get something going between you two. Mm-hmm. The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander in the 2 o'clock hour today. We'll have NFL true or false. We'll have coffee with the coach, and we got to get all of this in over the next 3 hours. How are we going to do that? How are we going to get this done? Seems like a lot.
We're going to get this done by you not looking at me and keeping the show moving.
I'm told I have to look at you more. The viewers have spoken. No. I won't even look at where we're going next.
No. Continue to look at your computer.
Now you're getting nervous. I'll just look at you for a while I sip water.
While you sip water. That does make me a little nervous.
I bet it does. I will look at Donald more. I've resolved to look more at Donald. So that's the lineup today. Good show coming up today. We're all over the place. Most of it dealing, obviously, with Sunday's game. The news of the day, Bill's practicing right now. And already Sean McDermott has ruled out a couple of players. Cornerback E.J. Gaines with his hamstring is going to miss Sunday's game, which means you would think Sharice Wright gets the start at corner. Tight end Charles Clay is going to be out. Linebacker Ramon Humber is going to be out with his thumb, Clay with his knee. Jordan Poyer still day-to-day. There may be an update on that once practice ends today. The Bills safety who came up with the knee injury on the last play last Sunday, Jordan Poyer, still day-to-day, has yet to practice going into today. If he does work today, I'm sure it will be limited. And, again, we may get an update on that when practice ends. And limited work today for guard Richie Incognito, who hasn't yet to practice this week. Richie, of course, has the ankle injury that came down the other day. The Raiders injury list bears watching today when that comes out, and as far as their practice participation and including what their status is for Sunday. They were already dealing with a couple of corner injuries. It was anticipated that one of their starting safeties, Carl Joseph, would be able to return from a groin injury, but he went from a limited participant in Raiders practice on Wednesday to a non-participant yesterday. We'll see what Carl Joseph does. More will be known later today. The Raiders will travel today. I believe their practice ends around noon Buffalo time? Yeah, must be. Maybe it's noon California time. But if Carl Joseph cannot play, Eric Harris would be his backup on their depth chart. Keith McGill, the other safety. Starting cornerback David Amerson looking less and less likely to play. He's got a foot injury, and his backup rookie Garyon Conley continues to be sidelined by a shin injury. So banged up Raiders in the defensive secondary, Donald. I don't know. Can the Bills, do they have what it takes to take advantage of that? Do they have the passing attack to take advantage of that?
I think they do. I think that's one of the weak parts of that defense.
Yeah, I just don't know if it matches up against Buffalo's strong suit.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Buffalo showed some signs last week that they could get it moving a little bit through the air. So we'll see if they can continue on that path, and completing passes down the field. Deontay Thompson, has been good. Jordan Matthews came back with a couple of catches. Hopefully we can get Zay Jones more involved in this thing. Nick O'Leary, all of these guys, I think they need to try and exploit that.
We'll see. I woke up early this morning, watched some Raiders video today, Raiders and Denver from October 1st, and saw those. I mean, Trevor Siemian really did a good job in the first half of that game, taking advantage of that secondary. They were a little bit banged up then, but I got thinking, do we have you know, the wherewithal to do something with that, you know?
Right.
Can we make plays in the passing game if they are banged up the way they appear they're going to be? We'll find out. I don't know.
Yeah, we got to find out and see. You know, last week was a good sign, you know, but let's see if they can continue on that. And that was running the ball and passing the ball. So let's see if this offense can continue moving forward.
And, you know, Kansas City did it to them last week, too.
Yeah.
Kansas City made big plays.
They made big plays.
Well, I want to get your thoughts on this matchup, the Bills and the Raiders. And you can do it via Twitter. We'd love to hear your voice on the phone. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. Our Twitter poll, it's the standard Friday Twitter poll as we look ahead to the game. What is the biggest key for a Bills victory over the Raiders on Sunday? What would be the biggest key for Buffalo? We offer a couple of options. You may have one of your own in the early going here. 46%, almost half of you say the Bills need to finish drives with touchdowns. 38% say they need to control Oakland's offensive weapons, and they have quite a few. 15% of you say the Bills need to maintain the solid run game that we saw flashes of, and really pretty steady flashes of, last Sunday against Tampa Bay. 1% of you say there's something else they can do. What do you think? What is the biggest key for the Bills' victory if they're going to get one over the Raiders on Sunday? You can weigh in on Twitter, on the Twitter poll. You can let us know what you think on Twitter, or ring us up, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Donald, I know you think that finishing drives with touchdowns is going to be one of the big keys, maybe the big key, huh?
Yeah, I do. I think finishing drives with touchdowns is important, and that's something that they haven't done this year. You know, they haven't finished drives with touchdowns. You've had a lot of field goals, which, you know, Steven Hauschka has made those field goals, but obviously we saw last week he missed one, you know, and you don't want to live and die the entire season on your field goal kicker. You want to be able to score touchdowns, you know, and get 7 points instead of just three, especially against an offense that can score points like the Oakland Raiders can.
Yeah, I think that's big. I would love to see, and if I had to pick one, obviously you'd like to see everything there happen for the Bills, but I would love to see the Bills maintain the run game that they got going last week. And it was pretty impressive, 173 yards. Tyrod played a big role in that. No reason why he can't do that again against this team. Khalil Mack, obviously, is the premier marquee defender on that Raiders defense, but mm-hmm. you know, there's not a great amount of talent after him. We already just talked about the secondary being banged up for Oakland. If they can run for 150, 175, close to 200 yards, I think the Bills can A, keep that explosive offense for Oakland off the field, B, move the ball down the field, move the chains, sustain drives, and finish with touchdowns, mm-hmm. and win this game. To me, my key would be maintaining the good start they had last week with the run game. And I think, you know, you never know until this happens. I'm inclined to think that the Bills sort of found themselves, and I'm talking about the offensive line, found themselves last week in the game against Tampa Bay. I asked Sean McDermott about it. We taped our pregame radio interview today and said, is that it? Did you find the key? And he said, ask me 4 o'clock on Sunday, essentially, you know. Because, it's a nice blend of the power game that a lot of offensive linemen wanted to play, and kind of the zone, the wide zone stretch game that Rick Dennison and his crew wanted to install. I think they found the key. I think, obviously, they got Shady McCoy going. To me, that is number one key in this game for the Bills to come out on top.
That running game is important. It's important for them to be able to run the ball, stay on the field, stay ahead of the chains, you know, on first down running the ball, on second down running the ball, and stay in third down and manageable. When you were in third down and manageable, that's when Tyrod Taylor is, you know, at his best. You know, now last week they did a good job on third downs. This week they need to continue to do a good job on third downs. And that starts off with what you do on first and second downs. And so that is big in the running game. And as we talk about third down, this Oakland Raiders defense is not good on third down.
Yeah.
Like, not good at all on third down. So as long as you're ahead of the chains and you don't have negative plays in the early downs, and LeSean McCoy is picking up 3, 4, 5 yards a clip running the ball, this offense is going to have a good day.
I'd take that 5, 4, 5 yards a clip for LeSean McCoy. But let us know what you think the key to this game on Sunday. What do you think? What do the Bills have to do to win it? 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's start with Ed in Akron. Go ahead, Ed. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Great.
How do you think about the Bills using their two tight end set? I mean, they got two really good tight ends, Chandler and Clay. I mean, let them get the third downs.
Ed, who would you say the tight ends were?
Chris Chandler and Charles Clay?
Yeah, so, you know, Charles Clay won't be playing in this game, but Nick O'Leary, you know, and Logan Thomas did a very good job last week, you know, and so I would like to see those guys continue to have that type of production and build off of that production that they started with last week.
Thanks very much for your call. Let's move along to Brad in Rochester. Hello, Brad. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Hey, I was on Buffalo's, the Bills website this morning. They had some pictures of the history of the Bills-Raiders matchup going way back, about 30 pictures or so.
Uh-huh.
Donald, you're in a couple of them.
Oh, so, yeah?
Yeah.
Where was this on the website? I was not informed of this.
Yeah, there's like 30, 35 pictures on there, and you're in a couple of them. You're trailing one guy on a touchdown run, and I think you might be in the back of the end zone catching a pass on another one, but I couldn't tell if it was you or Brad Smith because your number's blocked on that photo, if it was you or not.
Oh, I'm going to have to go check that one out.
My question is, what memories do you have from that Raiders game? Because I don't remember much from the Bills-Raiders game when you played. And also, the weather's supposed to be cold and rainy Sunday. Who do you guys think that favors with the injuries in the secondary on both teams this weekend?
I just checked the weather forecast. It says rain early, showers later, 50% chance of rain on Sunday with a high of 46, the wind's 5 to 10 miles per hour. What do you think?
Yeah. So who does that affect?
Anybody? I don't know.
I think it would favor the Bills in their running game if their running game is playing – if they're – playing like they should, it favors the Bills' offense. You know, it doesn't favor that Oakland Raiders' offense. Obviously, first of all, they have a lot of things stacked against them. They're coming to the East Coast, so they're going to be playing a 10 o'clock game. Then they're going to wake up, and it's freezing cold out here, which they're not used to playing out there in Oakland, and it might be raining, right? And their offense is a pass-first offense. They like to throw the ball all around. So I think, you know, you have a lot of opportunities to get some tip passes, to get some fumbles out of those receivers, and just drop passes out of them as well. Now, I think the weather would favor this offense as long as this offense is playing like it should play.
Yeah, I like that too. I think it well put. It's exactly what the Bills would like to happen.
Right.
And I think you're right too. And I tease you about complaining about weather. But so the Raiders come in tonight. They'll spend tomorrow in Buffalo. I don't know. They probably have a walkthrough scheduled somewhere, maybe even at their hotel. And at some point, every one of those 53 players and 15 or 20 coaches are going to say, man, it's cold here.
Yeah.
Man, it's cold and damp here. Right? And they're going to get out on the field Sunday at 11 a.m. and shiver. And
yeah.
You know what? I always get a kick out of we do our TV show out there, Bills All Access, on Sunday mornings. And on the colder days, nobody warms up. Nobody comes out. Mm-hmm. Nobody leaves the locker room, mm-hmm. the opponents anyway.
Yeah, it's like that. You're like, man,
forget
that.
You don't need to stretch and warm up.
You really need to because it's cold outside, right? But you're like, man, like you go out there and you get a quick stretch and you go back in.
Yeah.
Like, whoo, I got to stay in this warm locker room until it's time to go out there, you know, get some extra skin lube on and everything. Yeah, it's I guess because, you know, we played here. We're kind of used to it here, but when you get these teams coming up from Miami or coming out from California, in Arizona, anywhere where it's warm, they're like, man, it is cold out here.
Yeah.
Just like when we go out to those places, you know, we get later in the season, November, December, and we go down to Miami or go to Arizona or something. It's like, it is hot.
Yeah.
You know, it's you do feel it. I remember going out to Denver and, you know, you get out there in warm-ups and you're like, I can't breathe. Like this this whole mile high thing is serious. I can't breathe out here. It's you know, this stuff really does come into play at some point.
How about in Denver? You've seen it, right? They put a sign right outside the visitors'
yes.
locker room that says elevation, what is it, 5,000
yeah.
feet or something.
Whatever just, that, yeah, yeah. I've seen that. Like,
just in
oh,
case
really?
You may have forgotten that it's a mile high and that the air is thinner, they remind you, right? Right mm-hmm. when you walk out of the visitors' locker room.
Yes, that's exactly what they do. Yeah. They remind you about it and you're like, oh. And I'm telling you, when you get out there and you warm up, you really do feel it. You're like, oh, I can't breathe. Like, am I tired? Did I eat right this morning? Like, what did I do wrong? And there's really nothing you can do to prepare for that.
Doubt creeps in.
Let's I'm go telling to, you, it does.
Mike in Cheektowaga. Good afternoon, Mike. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, I was just calling about the red zone, you know, when the Bills get in the red zone. I don't know why they don't utilize DeMarco a little more, the fullback we got, because I watched him when he was with Atlanta, and he could do a lot of things down in the red zone. I just want your opinion on that thing.
Yeah, you know, this is something that makes me scratch my head sometimes, but I'll tell you, I think there's going to come a point where they're really going to need him to make a play, and then nobody's going to be thinking about him because they haven't thrown him the ball yet.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's like, Pat DeMarco just he just scored a touchdown for us, you know, in a key part of a game. So as long as everybody else is clicking, let's just keep him under the radar for now.
Yeah, I think DeMarco, and I really think, and I mentioned this on a radio show I did this morning, I really think there's a slightly, I'm not saying he's going to be a featured back, but a slightly expanded role coming up for Taiwan Jones based on that one shovel pass that he caught the other day. I think, I hope that the offensive strategists here thought, hey, we could use this guy. Maybe use him in place of Mike Tolbert from time to time to spell Shady McCoy. I think there's a role for him to play.
It's always big, and I've been saying this all week, it's always big when you can get your backups in the game. And Coach McDermott hit on this during one of his press conferences this week. When you can get your backups in and get those guys some work in a key game, you know, and you end up winning that game, that's huge for your team moving forward because you're going to have injuries, you know. And so, Taiwan Jones made a big play in a big part of the game. Now, he's not like a rookie or anything, but he hasn't been called on that much, you know. And so, I would love to see him get some more touches on the ball, you know, especially against his former team.
How am I doing? Eye contact.
I think you're good. I can tell you, like,
I'm open
looking
for,
at me.
I'm open for critique. Somebody says I don't look at Donald enough, I will. I also got to keep – I got to steer the ship here. your thoughts on how the Bills can do it, who are the key players, what are the key issues, give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Harold in Buffalo. Go ahead, Harold. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, fellas. I just want to say a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, Harold.
Thank you.
I appreciate your show. I listen to you guys every day. I just want to say I enjoyed the game last week. Buffalo played a real good game. But I didn't hear neither one of you guys or anybody saying about the special teams. If the special teams can and give us good field position and play well, our running game and mixing it up with the passing game, I think we will be successful against these guys and moving forward in this season. I'll hang up and hear your comments afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, early in the week we talked about the role that teams played in the win against Tampa, the fact that the Bucs had zero return yards on the day, the fact that Colton Schmidt had a spectacular first, second quarter punt down to the 9-yard line.
Yeah.
And, of course, Hauschka hitting the long one. So, of course, they played a big role.
The special teams play a huge role. And, you know, this is one of my keys to the game. As we're talking about our keys to the game a little bit, one of my keys is containing Cordero Patterson. He is a very good kickoff returner. Now, I think they're going to kick it out of the back of the end zone. That would be the best strategy against him. Just don't even give him an opportunity to run that thing back, because when he does, he's dangerous with the ball, you know, and they have to make sure they do a good job of staying in their lanes and tackling him if he gets a chance to return it.
Hey, we're going to talk a lot about the issues in this game and the keys to this game. This is not a part of this game, but it did come up over night, Donald. Anquan Boldin, who retired a couple of months ago in August, all of a sudden has expressed interest in playing again, and the Bills have given his agent permission to explore trades with other teams. ESPN's Adam Schefter obtained a letter that the Bills sent to Anquan Boldin's agent, Tom Condon. He was seeking permission to speak with other teams, and the letter says, Boldin, who obviously the Bills hold his rights, the letter says you can do that. We can show you a portion of the letter, I believe, on what the Bills say. The Bills reserve the right to have ultimate say on acceptable trade compensation, as well as the designated assignee club, if requested to do so by the club, whether orally or in writing. And this is the letter to Anquan Boldin's agent. You will be required to provide the club with the names of any teams or NFL personnel with whom you made contact regarding a possible trade for Anquan Boldin. Boldin apparently wants to play, hasn't shut the door. Sean McDermott was asked about it today and asked about how much he knows about this situation and what his take is on this. Here's what the head coach of the Bills said today.
I'm aware of that, Mike, that went on. But really my focus and our focus is, my focus isn't on this game, the 63 guys that I coach and the Oakland Raiders right now.
Just for clarity, you say you're aware that went on. You mean just a letter in general, but not him specifically asking?
Him.
When you say you're aware that it went on, do you mean him asking about the Bills, or do you mean just a letter in general being sent?
When you say him asking about the Bills, I'm not sure.
If there was any interest in the Bills having him return to this team.
I'm aware that he was interested in returning. Other than that, I'm not going to get into any specifics. I'm also aware of the letter that was sent.
In keeping with your approach of always trying to make the team better, do you still see him as an asset, or do you, in your mind, is he just a guy that's not available to you because the intention is clear that he'd want your team to trade him somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, Vic, again, with all due respect to your question, I am 100% focused on this football team. And anything else would be a mistake on my part. I wouldn't be doing my job. So that's what I'm focused on. I care about the guys that are in this building. And, you know, we've got a big challenge in front of us come Sunday. So I have to, we've got to respect that process also here.
Sean McDermott, whose focus is where it should be on the Oakland Raiders on Sunday. But the Bolden issue, Donald, comes up again. I don't know, a couple of things. I don't know what kind of trade value he would have. He, you know, was out in the open market. I think this kind of false start that Bolden's had with the Bills might raise some suspicions around the league as to whether he's really ready to return, whether it's near his home or not. And, you know, the Bills, I think, smartly are preserving their rights here. If he's going to play, then we have something to say about it, the Bills are saying.
Exactly. If you want to play and if there's another team that wants you, well, we own your rights and you know, we'll trade you away and get something for you. But I think that's the only real way that they will allow him to go somewhere. I don't think they're going to release him because it was, you know, for him to leave and now want to come back but want to be traded, it's just not bad. It's not good business on his part.
No.
You know, and so I think that they would go ahead and trade him and try to get something. But I, like you said, I don't know what his value is. Maybe like a compensatory pick. I don't know what his value is.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this as the show moves along. We're going to break here, though. We're going to come back. Mark Kelso standing by to join us on the set. And Hall of Famer James Lofton. We'll put them both up here. A couple of former teammates from the Super Bowl era. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy, Donald Jones. We got a full set, a full house. We have a Hall of Famer and a Hall of Fame broadcaster in the making, Mark Kelso. All of them on set with us right now for a couple of minutes. James Lofton is here, the Hall of Fame wide receiver for the Bills, the Raiders, a couple of other teams, the Packers. He's here to call the game on CBS on Sunday with Andrew Catalan. Welcome home. Welcome back to Buffalo, James.
Thank you. It's so nice to be back. But remember that book, You Can't Go Home Again?
Yes.
And I found out why. I tried to figure out the place we used to rent, and I couldn't find it. So you can't go home again because you don't know where the house is.
You've lost your way.
I'm driving around Orchard Park going, I think it was down this street, but things change.
Yeah.
They really do.
Even an OP.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you here. I know you got to get to your production meetings. I wanted to ask you, this came up on the show yesterday, right, Donald? And people talk about you being in the Hall of Fame, and did you go in as a Bill, as a Raider, as a Packer? Mm-hmm. Do you go in as a – as with one team, how does that work?
It's not like Major League Baseball where you pick a cap.
Yeah.
The Hall of Fame does do a little more merchandising now for your team, but it was interesting. When I went in, there was some Bill stuff and there was some Packer stuff. But recently, they started making a T-shirt with all the guys on it. Thurman Thomas noticed that I was not on the Bills T-shirt. He went to the Hall of Fame people. Now I'm on the Bills T-shirt.
Uh-huh.
So I'm on the Packers T-shirt.
All that.
And I'm on the Bills T-shirt. So Thurman has some sway with the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Thurman didn't tell us that.
No,
and that's what we were talking about this.
That's what we were talking to Thurman about.
He didn't tell us that.
So he got me on both teams. So when I went in, it was all the teams that I played for, and everybody. And you really go in, you represent everyone from your Pop Warner team to the last NFL team that you played on.
Wow. James Lofton in studio with us. You're here to call the game. We were talking with some of the callers about this matchup. What do you think of this matchup? What kind of a chance do the Bills have Sunday?
Well, it's interesting because if you followed the Raiders last year during their 12-4 season, seven games that they had were decided by 8 points or less. So they went down to the final second. So you look at a 12-4 season and say, man, they were really good. What if they only win 4 out of those 7? Now I think doing the math, I don't need to take my shoes off. They're 9-7, and they're just kind of, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
But because they won so many games in dramatic fashion, you think that's going to carry over. Now they're sitting there 3-4 coming off of a very dramatic Thursday night game against the Kansas City Chiefs. They potentially have a lot of offense, and the Bills have shown a lot of defense so far. So it's strength versus strength as this game progresses.
As you talk about the Bills' defense, I'm sure you study some film. What do you see in
this
defense? Yeah, what do you see in this defense?
I see incredible hustle, but I just see guys who are relentless. One of the things that they've obviously benefited from is the takeaways. Does the ball always bounce your direction? No, not always. But if you're after it and you're aggressively pursuing it, you're going to get a lot of those turnovers that people say, oh, that was luck. Well, it's kind of luck the first time. But when it happens three, four times, it's by design. And you practice it, you preach it. I was out of practice watching Mike Waffle with the defensive lineman, and they're doing a tip drill, and they're going like in a conga line, and they're passing the ball back the whole time. And if they mess up, they got to start over. Mm-hmm. So that's something that they're into, and it becomes contagious once you start getting turnovers.
You know, defensive linemen, they want to be skill position guys anyway.
They want to dance. Drills
like wait, that. Wait, yeah. Want to be. Defensive ends may be the best athletes on the field. When you can take a guy and he can dip around the corner, mm-hmm. going up against somebody who weighs 330 pounds and he's 260, and you talk to these guys and you look in their bios, they were all great high school running backs, and then they progressed, they got a little bit bigger. So to me, that's the most talented group on the field right there.
Hey, Mark, I know you've done your homework on this Raiders team, and I wonder, as you look at the playmakers, Crabtree, Cooper, that group, any questions for James? I mean, you've made your observations, but this is a Hall of Fame wide receiver here.
And he didn't say, and I'm right here, with his Raider tenure, right? I
mean, correct.
Yeah, Raider tenure as well, so I'm hoping they're on a Raiders T-shirt as well. But I still remember the play. What was it? I mean, were we playing the Rams when Frank threw that 7-yard hook to you over on the right side of Rich Stadium at that time, when you went over the 14,000-yard mark, and at that time he was the leading receiver in all time in NFL history. So
remember that
recall being on the sidelines for that. But, I mean, this team, this Raider team, just has talent on the offensive side of the ball just pouring out of their pores. And something that Cooper has done very, very well in his early part of his career, like James used to do, I really love when receivers stem those defensive backs. Mm-hmm. And they run a lot of stem routes where he'll start one direction, and if you turn your hips one way, Kansas City did this a lot last week, if you turn your hips and he comes back the other way, now you have to decide, am I going to flip my hips back the other side or am I going to wheel turn? Either one of those things puts the advantage on the offensive side of the football, and I think Cooper did that very well. Jared Cook is a really difficult matchup. There's no question about that. And Crabtree, I mean Derek Carr is really good anticipation passer, and you can't throw that 15-yard comeback unless you're an anticipation passer, and Crabtree runs that as well as anybody in the league.
You're so correct, and it's funny. Crabtree, Cooper, Seth Roberts, the third receiver. Right. Jared Cook did something last week. You know, we get all these stats now, and the stats pop up instantly. But he's the first tight end in NFL history to have a 100-yard game with four different teams. So that's kind of a nice stat, but then you wonder, okay, well, why do other three teams move on from him? But he's been a consistent guy, and so it gives you everybody to throw to. Mm-hmm. Now as a quarterback, you don't have to go back and say, oh, I don't want to throw it to Billy because Billy, you know, not catching the ball well today. Right. But so he can go wherever he wants on that field. Now, Marshawn Lynch is not going to play, but Jalen Richard and Washington, another kid, both 5'8 kids, they may be better in the passing game than Marshawn Lynch, and they may actually open up the field more for the passing game down the field because you have a couple of really good check down backs.
Yeah. Hey, James, we got to let you go. You got
what?
Work to do. Yeah, you got production meetings to go to, but we thank you for carving out a few minutes with us today.
Thank you.
We'll catch up again.
You go back
Sunday.
To my very first show.
Yeah, the first broadcasting you did. Now look where you are, working with Andrew Catalan.
I like it.
Catalan. Good for you.
I think Andrew Catalan's working with James Locke.
Oh, there you go. Thanks, James. Good luck. Have a good broadcast. Mark stays with us. We're going to be back with more breakdown, more of the Bills Raiders when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Mark Kelso in studio with us for the next couple of minutes. It was great to have James Lofton in here. He's got a busy schedule with his production meetings. He's going to go meet with the head coach, Sean McDermott, but we thank him for carving out a few minutes with him. Mark, what was it like in practice back in the day covering actually two Hall of Famers coming at you, Lofton and Andre Reed, every day in practice?
Yeah, back in the day. Well, I'll tell you, it was great because you knew you were preparing against the best week in and week out, even because those guys would get on scout team reps as well because the roster wasn't quite as big. So we didn't have guys that were dedicated to scout team reps.
Right.
Those guys would take plays. And James just – he was such a smooth runner. He always trained in the offseason with the USC track team. and he could run like the wind, and then would get in the red area, and he knew all, he had all the little tricks, and we talked a little bit when he was here about stemming defensive backs. So when the receiver starts one direction to try to move the defensive back and get him in a lateral position and then move to where they really want to run the route, and that creates some lateral separation, gives the quarterback a chance to fit it in. So we're in the red area one time at Fredonia College in training camp. And I know that if he runs a seven cut, right, I've got to make this play in a red area route situation. And he dipped himself inside, and I bit on the inside, and I came right in front. And if Jim throws it, I'm picking it off. But no, Jim didn't throw it. He went back to the back pylon, and I was chasing the whole way, and he beat me by half a step. And, you know, I was happy for our offense, but I wasn't very happy about that play. But what that helped to do is prepare me for game day so that you didn't make that same mistake. But he was the smoothest guy running patterns, and just really, really appreciated his tenure here in Buffalo.
Was there anybody in the league then or anybody in the league now that you compare to James Lofton as far as style, type of receiver?
Well, honestly, in the league then, I mean, I really think he was a lot like Jerry Rice. I mean, he was extremely smooth, and it didn't look like he was running very fast, but he could bite off big chunks of yardage when he's running because he had such a great stride. And if you got up in his face and tried to stop him and make him restart, he didn't have great quickness. But boy, he could just run like the wind when he got out.
What about a guy now like AJ Green?
I think you could find some comparisons there as well. I mean, Green's probably got a little thicker body, so he can take a little bit more punishment. But I can remember those skinny posts and those deep routes that when you see highlights of James Lofton. I mean, you see some from Buffalo, but you see an awful lot from Green Bay and him catching those skinny posts from the extended red area at about the 30-yard line across the middle, right in the end zone. And I mean, there's some great things that he was able to do, and he's a Hall of Famer for a reason. Certainly, well deserved of that honor. And again, we were just really grateful to have him here in the building for 3 years and three of the Super Bowl years.
Mark Kelso in studio with us. All right, let's talk about Sunday's game, the Bills and the Raiders, and those Oakland wide receivers. Pretty talented, a little bit different from each other, and it might not just be the two of them. Donald's been talking about Seth Roberts, number 10, a lot this week, too.
Well, and Seth Roberts has got some real quickness at the line of scrimmage. If you try to get in his face, I mean, again, so let me back up a second. The best way to defend any quarterback, it doesn't matter what quarterback it is you have to disrupt the timing of the play. Now, how are you going to disrupt the timing? Are you going to collision guys at the line of scrimmage? Are you going to rush the passer? Or are you going to confuse the quarterback so that he's not sure what the coverage is, so that his read situation, he can't progress through his reads like he'd like to do? So you've got to figure out what you're going to do. Well, if you get up in the face of Seth Roberts, I mean, he is wicked quick at the line of scrimmage, and he's going to escape at the line of scrimmage. So if you're playing in a – let's say the Bills are playing in a two-man situation, which I think would be something that they could run effectively against this team and hopefully prevent some of those crossing routes. But if he defeats you at the line of scrimmage, he's going to gain inside position, and then the safeties are going to be a little bit wider because they're expecting the corner to have inside position, and the middle of the field is going to be wide open for a delivery from Derek Carr. So he's got some real abilities inside, and I think that's why they use him in the slot so often. Sometimes they'll move him across the line of scrimmage as well, and they'll use that jet sweep, or they'll use the jet sweep fake to freeze those linebackers for a split second and then hand the ball off to Rashard or to Washington. And then you got guys on the outside. Cooper's, I think, a little smoother, not so abrupt coming off the line of scrimmage, but he's got great smoothness, and he'll run four or five different angles when he's running the deep go down the sideline. He'll start inside, then he'll come back outside, and then he'll come back to the inside. So he's trying to get those defensive backs or the safeties in a certain lateral position, which will open up a window for Derek Carr. And then you got Crabtree. I could go through the entire list, but Crabtree's just a wily veteran and has been in this league for a long time, and he's a guy that can still run that comeback route. Of course, caught the big catch against Kansas City. What was that? It was a fourth play that they ran in that particular series. I actually thought Cook scored
on
when he made the reception. I didn't see it in slow motion, so couldn't really tell. But there was some contention as to that, and then ultimately Crabtree makes that reception to give them the victory against Kansas City.
Go ahead, Donald.
The biggest thing is they've been very inconsistent. As good as they are, they have been very inconsistent as a receiving core, just dropping passes. I think they have the most dropped passes in the league out of any receiving core.
Yeah, and again, you got to have consistency if you're going to win. I think sometimes Carr gets a little bit of a little gunslinger mentality, yeah. And he just fires it in there, and it's a tight window, but he's going to fit it in, and sometimes that goes awry, or the ball deflects off the receiver's hand, it turns into an interception, and when they're on top of their game, they play really, really well, and they have a lot of weapons, and they can hurt you, and they can go big on you too. They're going to go big play. I mean. And throw it downfield, and they did that a couple times against Kansas City. So it'll be interesting to see which team shows up. I suspect that they understand the kind of the wall that they're up against in Oakland, and the fact that they were favored, which really means nothing now that the season is almost to the midway point. But they understand where they need to be and where they should be at this point, and where they're not. Part of it because of the injury to Derek Carr and the fact he didn't play a couple games, although E.J. Manuel played a really effective game and looked really sharp against the Chargers, who have a great defense, and they were unable to win that game. They dropped a couple because of Carr's absence. So they've got to take the opportunity to win every game that they have, that they feel like they have the advantage, and see if they can get themselves back into the playoff hunt.
I hear people say Derek Carr is one of the best young quarterbacks in the game. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. Like, he's in my top 3 to 5 in the game right now, Derek Carr.
Well, and people would say to me, and I've had talks with scouts about this whole thing, and if we sat around a table and we said we're going to construct our team, who do you want for your quarterback? I'm not taking Brady, and I'm not taking Aaron Rodgers. Now, those two guys are great, but because of their age and the fact they've been in the league a long time, I'm taking Derek Carr. And so I would say, I'm probably one that would say, I think he's the best young quarterback, but no, he is the best, period. There's some contention as to whether or not he's better than a Rodgers or a Brady, but I think he's in that conversation right now. And if I'm building my team around one quarterback in this league, based on all those factors, I'm building it around Derek Carr.
Can I say this, too, about people who think you have to finish, dead last in the league to get a franchise quarterback?
He didn't get drafted.
He's a second rounder.
Yes, exactly.
You don't have to tank to get a franchise quarterback, an elite-level quarterback.
Right. Every team missed on him.
You have to draft well, scout well, develop well, and the guy's got to have, that it factor. He's got it, I think.
Right.
Well, he's got leadership qualities, I think, that are off the charts. And if you look at guys – I'm a big guy about deflecting attention to your teammates. If you're playing well, you're going to get all the credit you deserve, and you don't need to bring it upon yourself. And he is the ultimate guy. I mean, he is always talking about his receivers and a running game and his offensive line. And you saw what happened with the late hit against Kansas City, man. Yeah. Every single offensive lineman was in on that because they're saying, do not do that to our quarterback. We're not going to allow that to happen. And that just shows you the relationship that he has and the respect that he has in that organization.
Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, in studio with us as we preview the Bills and the Raiders. On the other side of the ball, an elite-level player, Khalil Mack. I don't know what the answer is for him.
There is no answer. You can contain him a little bit, but you can't control him. And there are times when he'll come off the edge and he'll lean on the offensive tackle because it's a three-step drop and he knows he's not going to get there. So he's kind of thinking, okay, I'm going to rush a little bit. If things break down and the quarterback scrambles, I can come out of this and I can run the quarterback down, but I'm going to peel back and try to make a play downfield if it's a short throw. And then there are other times when he just decides, man, I'm going to get the quarterback. And he will take you off your feet as an offensive tackle. And it's difficult to handle. He'll drop in coverage a lot. They don't rush more than four guys very often. I mean, a lot of times they'll have five guys on the line of scrimmage quite often because they play that 30 defense or 50 defense on early downs. Irvin will jump up on the line of scrimmage. Typically, Mack will line up on the open side, and Irvin will line up on the tight end side like a Sam linebacker. You better bring people over to that side to block Khalil Mack because he'll run you down from the backside. And he's really disciplined as well. Not that the Bills are going to run a quarterback read, but if you try to pull it out and run around the edge, he's going to run you down. But he is so athletic, and they just going to say just added Navarro Bowman, right, who I think is one of the best middle linebackers in the game, and he's just getting his sea legs in Oakland. And when those guys start playing really well together and really understanding how everybody fits in that defensive scheme, I think they're going to continue to get better. Last week against Kansas City, they were the victim of a few big plays, and other than that, Kansas City did not move the ball very well against that Oakland defense.
Now, this is going to be a tough question because obviously you're studying Oakland this week, but in your opinion, who's better out of he or Von Miller, and what makes them different?
Yeah, and well, who's better? I would say I don't know if you can say who's better. I would say I'd probably give the nod to Von Miller because of the longevity, and he's mm-hmm. done it for a longer period of time than Khalil Mack. But he's the best young pass rusher in the league right now, and he's the closest thing, if he's not already of equal ability, to Von Miller. Both those guys just have great leverage control on the offensive tackle. They have great explosion off the line of scrimmage. They're disciplined. I don't know if I could pick out a specific difference between those two guys. I'd like to have them both, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I had one.
Every team would like.
Right. And if I had one, I'm not going to trade one for the other because I think their abilities are so similar and so dynamic. But they're what you would consider a difference maker. You have got mm-hmm. to know where those guys are at every single time, every single snap on the field. I'd say probably the one thing that Khalil Mack, I think he's probably a little bit smaller, but he has such explosion, in his lower half when he gets his arm on that offensive tackle and he can just, again, take him off his feet. And there's not a tight end, it doesn't matter who it is, Gronkowski or one of these guys you think can really block, there's not a tight end in the league who has any chance of handling Khalil Mack when he decides he's going to rush the quarterback. But I think the one thing that he does probably more effectively than Von Miller is he drops in coverage a lot and he has great awareness of where he needs to be, whether it's that little alley spot between the hash and the numbers or if he needs to get to the flat. And then when you throw the ball, if you throw a swing pattern to the running back, I mean, he's going to have great closing speed. Yeah.
Hey, Mark, just to wrap things up, let me get you to weigh in on the Twitter poll and maybe the overview of this game on Sunday. And this will be difficult for you because I know there's a lot of considerations that goes into it. But on Twitter, we're asking listeners today, what's the biggest key for a Bills win over the Raiders on Sunday? There's a lot that will go into it. But if you had to isolate one, would it be any of these? Finish drives with touchdowns, control Oakland's offensive weapons, the Bills have a solid run game or something else? Can you isolate one and say they do that, they're in good shape?
I think one of the things that they're going to have to do is they're going to have to eliminate big plays. I mean, when the Bills have gotten in trouble this year defensively, it's when they have allowed big plays to occur against them. I mean, we saw that against Cincinnati, and we saw it again last week when they had difficulty winning that game and a valiant effort to come back and win that game at the end. But it was because of some big plays that they find themselves in the situation that they were behind late in the game. And I think they have this template defensively that they're going to make teams drive 11 or 12 or 13 plays if they're going to put points on the board. And obviously you'd like to be really good in the red area, which they have been until last week.
Yeah.
And then you're going to force teams to kick field goals and hope that your team or expect that your team's going to score 21 points or 24 points. I think on the offensive side, they've got to open up a little bit. And people keep asking me, and when you get these, they call from San Francisco, and they're calling when they call from the opposing teams on a weekly basis, like, what can Tyrod do better? The only thing that I think Tyrod needs to do is trust himself. He when he's decisive, he makes good decisions. There's still times when I don't think he trusts himself in a tight window. And if he does, and we can get some stretch offensively, I think they'll have a chance against this Oakland Raiders team.
Last question. Do you think he doesn't trust himself or he doesn't trust the receivers?
Well, I don't think there's distrust with the receivers. Mm-hmm. There might be lack of familiarity,
right.
So he's not ready to trust them. But here and the throw that I would point to was it last week?
Larry?
I can't even remember. Was it last week? But he had a hook. He had a 10-yard hook route on his left side. And if he lets it go, I think it was Zay Jones, so it was last week. If he lets it go when he's starting to come out of his break, then he makes that reception. But he held on to it for an extra split second because he hadn't seen him turn around yet.
Mm-hmm.
He waited, and then he got pressured from his right side and ended up a sack on the play. Right. And that was the play to say that I say, let it go. Trust yourself. He has great instincts. I think Tyrod does. And I think when he lets it go, that more often than not, he's going to be successful when he's going to fit it into that tight window. So just trust yourself.
Mark, thanks for this. For being a guest on our show, we have a special presentation for you. we have this magnet for your car.
Thank
Sunday's
you.
Game is presented by Dunn Tire and Bridgestone, and fans can pick up their Bills magnet at the gates on Sunday, right before the game between the Raiders and the Bills. And I would like to present it to you, Mark Kelso, for your vehicle.
I need some new tires, too, so maybe I'll stop over at Dunn Tire.
See what that gets you. Just put that down on the counter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a magnet at the game on Sunday, and Mark already has his.
I'm going to put this right on my refrigerator.
There you go, or on your car. Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, joining us in studio. When we come back, Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup, a look at the Bills and the Raiders matchup and some other matchups around the league. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills practice inside the stadium on the turf in New Era Field today. That practice ended about 45 minutes ago, and the week is all set. Ruled out for Sunday's game is cornerback E.J. Gaines with his hamstring injury. Of course, Charles Clay and Ramon Humber are both out. Jordan Poyer remains day-to-day. Limited work today for guard Richie Incognito. The Bills are going to need a healthy secondary to go up against the Raiders, obviously. Retired wide receiver Anquan Boldin has expressed interest in playing again in the NFL, and the Bills overnight gave his agent permission to explore trades with other teams. ESPN obtained a letter from the Bills and GM Brandon Bean to Bolden's agent Tom Condon. As Condon asked for permission to speak with other teams, the letter says Boldin wants to be in closer proximity to his home in Florida, and the Bills have granted that with certain pretty restrictive conditions. Joe Flacco, the Ravens quarterback, suffered a concussion last night in the 40-0 Baltimore rout of the Miami Dolphins, left the field in the first half in the midst of his best game of the season. He took a shot to the head late in the first half from Kiko Alonso, the Dolphins linebacker, sliding to the ground. As we said, the Ravens won it by a score of 40-0. Buffalo Sabres back on the practice ice this morning at Harbor Center, coming off a back-to-back slate earlier this week. They beat Detroit on Tuesday, lost in Columbus on Wednesday. They had the day off yesterday. Zemgus Girgensons returned to the lineup Wednesday after missing three games with a lower body injury. Sabres play a matinee tomorrow. They host the San Jose Sharks tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock at KeyBank Center. And the World Series Game 3 tonight. The series shifts to Houston for the next three games. Right-hander Yu Darvish will be on the mound for L.A. tonight. Houston puts Lance McCullers Jr. on the mound. First pitch shortly after 8 o'clock tonight. World Series Game 3. The Dodgers in Houston all tied up at one win apiece. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. As we get set for the Bills and the Oakland Raiders, John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joining us right now is the man who puts together ESPN's NFL matchup for NFL Films, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, and one of the co-hosts and executive producer of NFL Matchup, our regular Friday spot with Greg Cosell. Greg, thanks for joining us. John Murphy and Donald up here. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Gentlemen, I look forward to my Fridays with you guys, and we got a big game in Buffalo this weekend.
Yeah, it's as big a game we had around here in a little while, Greg. And what do you think? We're kind of trying to figure out who's going to play in the defensive backfield for Buffalo. That would be a problem against this Raiders team with all these weapons they have, wouldn't it?
Well, I assume Sharice Wright's going to play for E.J. Gaines, right? Isn't he going to play at right corner?
Yeah, that would be the plan, yep.
So, I mean, he'll replace him. He has experience. He's been in the league quite a while with a number of teams. And I guess the rest of the secondary will be pretty much the same. Leonard Johnson's the slot corner. White's obviously predominantly the left corner. So Jordan Poyer's status? Is he a go?
We have not seen the Friday. We haven't seen it yet. Even this morning, Sean McDermott was talking about him day-to-day. And that's a big one. They'd have to go with rookie Trey Alston if Poyer's not available. Poyer's been one of the best players in the Buffalo secondary so far.
No, they have two players at safety who, to me, fit exactly what Sean McDermott wants. Two guys who you probably wouldn't say are high level athletically for the position, but are both smart, aware, have a good feel for the concepts of the coverage. You know, Poyer and Micah Hyde fit that role. And I think, you know, in some ways you can make the argument that they're similar to a Kirk Coleman who Sean had in Carolina. Not a high level athlete, but really smart and understands what Sean wants to get done.
Hey, Greg, last year the Bills started out 4-2. They went down to Miami and lost that game, and everything went downhill from there. This year, the Bills starting at 4-2, Oakland Raiders at 3-4. Could this be, as you talk about a big game, could this be like a key game for the rest of the season for both of these teams?
Yeah, it's always hard to answer that because, I'm not there and I don't have a feel for the mindset of the team. But I think that this is a big game because they're home, number one. And this team, I think, has played well. Like, I don't look at the way they've won and how they played as a fluke. I think this team has played well. I think they've gotten very strong play overall from Tyrod Taylor. And I think that's a real positive. I think under Sean and Leslie Frazier, this defense has played really well. I mean, there's one player I was really excited to talk about today, and that's Milano. I think he's added an awful lot to their nickel package. I think he's a really good athlete. The interception he made last week at the end of the first half, I think, really speaks to the kind of player that he is within the concept of their nickel defense. So I don't look at their record as a fluke. Now, having said that, could they lose to Oakland? Of course they could. But I think this team is clearly trending in the right direction.
Now, I know you like to do matchups. So in this game, what would be the most important matchup for everybody to watch?
Well, you know, that's a tough question, Donald, and I'll tell you why. Because Sean and Leslie, they don't play a ton of man-to-man. Now, every team plays man somewhere along the line, but they're not a high-percentage man team. So, for instance, last week, Amari Cooper had 11 for 210 against a Kansas City Chiefs defense that's high-percentage man. And they put Cooper in the slot because they really liked the Cooper-Phillip-Gaines matchup, and Gaines played him man-to-man. I don't think you're going to see that kind of individual matchup, certainly not from the Bills' defense versus the Raiders' passing game.
I wonder, Greg, what happened to the Raiders in that four-game losing streak they had? What did you see there as you followed along their season, you know, from a matchup sense, from, you know, watching the video film review? What went wrong for them? Obviously, you know, Carr was out a little bit, but what else was going wrong for them in that four-game losing streak?
Well, Murph, without getting into the weeds, I think the two main things with the Raiders have been that their defense has not been very good, and they've had issues at corner and clearly at linebacker. Just to show you the issues at linebacker, they signed Navarro Bowman last Monday. He plays Thursday night, plays every snap, and wears the green dot calling the signals. Yeah. So that tells you the issues they were having at linebacker. That's number one. And number two is a total inability to run the football. So when you have two significant flaws, those can come up to bite you any given week. So they're a very inconsistent team. We saw them in their last game with the offense really sort of explode a little bit, certainly with the pass game, and they were able to eke out a last-second win against the Chiefs, but they still have their issues with their defense and their back seven in particular and with their run game.
So did they fix any of those issues and then win over the Chiefs, or is it still yet to be determined?
That's yet to be determined. I mean, we have to give Bowman, who's a true professional, a ton of credit, but I think it's too early to say after one game. They still gave up 30 points after one game to say that the defensive issues are fixed.
Greg Cosell, the executive producer analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, is on the line with us. You talked about Matt Milano a second ago. Sean McDermott's fond of pointing out how many rookies he has on the field contributing, and Tre'Davious White has been a major contributor for the Bills through the first half of the season. What have you seen from him on film? What do you think of him, Greg?
I love Tre'Davious White coming out of LSU. I thought he was a top three corner coming out. You know, a lot of people didn't love him because he didn't make a lot of interceptions. But watching him on film, he played outside. He played in the slot. Now, obviously, he's playing left corner for Buffalo. But there's a kid who I thought played really under control, really good technique, really a good feel for routes, understood how to play with leverage. I thought he was really advanced and refined as a college corner. And it doesn't surprise me at all that he's been able to step in as a starter from day one, and I think he's played really well. Now, every once in a while, he'll get beat over the top because he's not a burner as a corner, but I think just as in understanding how to play the position, I think he's really good.
Talking about matchups in this game, one matchup that I'm not going to say I lay awake at night and don't sleep because of it, but I know Khalil Mack. I've seen Khalil Mack wreck games. Uh-huh. How have teams handled Khalil Mack this season, and what kind of success have they had?
With difficulty, Murph, with difficulty. he's a really good player, and the thing that is often overlooked about him, because he's a very, very good pass rusher, is that he's a really dominant run player as well. He can wreck your running game, and I think that's probably for the Bills maybe a more important issue, because they still want to be able to run the ball with some consistency, and they're going to need it, you know, to get him blocked, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Oakland put him on their left, the right of the Bills, to get that matchup against Mills, because I think that they'll feel that that's not a good matchup for Buffalo.
Hey, with all the talk about Khalil Mack, and rightfully so, do you think people overlook Irving on the other side?
He's a good player, Donald. He's certainly not the explosive game wrecker that I think Mac can be any given week. But Urban certainly is a high-level athlete. So, yeah, I mean, you don't want to overlook him, but I think Mac is clearly the better player and arguably one of the two or three best defensive players in the league.
Greg, you know, we acknowledge what Mac can do. He can wreck a game, but the numbers indicate that the Raiders' defense has not been stellar. I guess when you talk about this matchup, what can the Bills take advantage of against Oakland's defense? What would be the best course of action for the Buffalo offense against this Oakland defense on Sunday?
Well, to me, Buffalo's offense is scheme-based, Murph, because, you know, when you look at their receiving core, you don't necessarily look at the receiving core and go, hey, they can really get a good matchup with this receiver against a corner. You know, I think they're very scheme-based, and I think that's the way they have to play. I think that Sean and Rick Dennison understand that. They're very good on first down. Then you have to convert some third downs. I mean, look, I thought that the completion to Deontay Thompson for 27 yards last week on third and five was as good a throw as we've seen Taylor make in a situation like that. He got drilled just as he threw the ball. That was a big-time NFL throw now. Now, you need to make some of those throws. It's the NFL, and you will be in third-down situations. So I don't think it's a matchup thing with Buffalo. I think it's more of a scheme-based thing, and then Taylor and some of these receivers will have to make plays.
Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL matchup on the line with us. I want to move around the league a little bit here, Greg, and talk about last night's game. I thought the Ravens might get
a game last night, Mark?
Yeah.
Was there a game last night?
I thought the Ravens.
Stanford won late. Yeah, you're right.
I thought the Ravens would get the better of the Dolphins, but I didn't see that margin of victory. And I didn't see Matt Moore. I've never seen him play that poorly. What do you think's going on with that Miami offense?
Well, the problem with the Miami offense always starts with their run game. When they can run the ball as they did when they came back against Atlanta, when their O-line dominated, then their offense can work. If they can't run the ball, they're not good enough in the passing game, either with Jay Cutler right now or with Matt Moore. I mean, there's a reason Matt Moore is a backup. I think he can probably play in the league for 10 years as a backup, but he's certainly not a true come-from-behind quarterback, and the game got away from them, and they can't really play like that. Their run game is critical, and they didn't run the ball. And I know, you know, Miami being in your division, that's the key. You have to shut down their run game, and that's exactly what the Ravens did. And by the way, I kind of expected that because the Ravens got their you-know-whats whipped the week before by Minnesota's run game, and they have good personnel. So normally good personnel doesn't play poorly 2 weeks in a row.
Now, you know, that AFC North division is just confusing to me. I don't know who's going to – I think – well, obviously Pittsburgh is going to – I would think will end up winning that division and could be a possible Super Bowl team. But does Baltimore have something to say? Did they show you something last night that says, man, this team is a team that we should look out for?
Well, I think the thing with Baltimore that has gradually been getting better and we'll see how it progresses has been a run game. Alex Collins has sort of now developed into their number one back. He was an interesting player coming out of Arkansas. I think he's a sustaining kind of runner. I think he is the kind of guy that can give you a run game that gets, you know, 3 yards, 4 yards, 7 yards. And I think that's what they absolutely need. They're very limited in the pass game because they simply don't have a lot of healthy weapons. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if Flacco had not got hurt because Macklin was back and he made that great throw for the touchdown. But Baltimore's going to have to be a team that's ultimately built on a run game and defense.
Greg, what is going on with the Atlanta Falcons, and particularly offensively? The Falcons are going to play at the Meadowlands Sunday at 1 o'clock. The Jets have a capable defense. Is this going to be another one of those games where the AFC East has its way with last year's NFC champs?
You know, I wish I could tell you what I saw from the Falcons O against New England, but believe it or not, Murph, because of the fog, we really couldn't see the coaching tape very well. So I didn't get a chance to see that game. On tape, that is. So, but one, you know, one area they've had, which I think is they've got to work through that Kyle Shanahan was dynamic at a year ago, is what I always call run pass fusion, where their pass game off run action looked exactly like their run game and caused a lot of problems for defenses. They haven't been able to find that rhythm this year. So while they're still running the ball reasonably well, the pass game off the run game has not been anywhere near as effective.
Is that just a case of Kyle Shanahan no longer there? Is that what we're looking at there?
That's probably too easy an answer, and we've discussed that in our matchup room, and none of us have a brilliant, profound answer to that other than the fact that it's not working.
It's just confusing to me because you have a quarterback who, you know, looked like he was becoming a great, great quarterback in this league. You have so many playmakers, but they just can't get it going in that Atlanta offense.
No, and look, Donald, you know, you played in the league. You know sometimes that those things snowball. I mean, you know, it just seems that it doesn't seem to be a reason other than you're not executing. And there doesn't seem to be a specific thing that you're doing wrong, but it's just the execution is not there.
Greg, I'm really interested in seeing how Deshaun Watson and the Texans, but Watson in particular, does with the game against Seattle late on Sunday. Do you see progress in Watson on a weekly basis? Where's his game at right now?
I think he's played solid football. I think that they've gotten ahead in a lot of games, of which he's a part of, no question. I think he's a poised kid. He's a composed kid. I think he's going to have to become a little more accurate overall. This game's going to be fascinating. Look, you guys played Seattle last year, and actually you put up some points against them. But the one thing about Seattle, they are not the old Seattle defense. If people are not watching Seattle and think they just play cover three, then they're missing the boat. This team has evolved now under Chris Richard. They are high percentage man-to-man. They blitz a lot, particularly with Bobby Wagner, and they go after the quarterback. I mean, look, you may remember a play last year. I think it was with 2 minutes to go, and Buffalo, I think, even had a chance to win where Taylor got sacked, and it was man-to-man, and Bobby Wagner blitzed, and he was part of the sack. I mean, they play aggressive man-to-man blitzing football, and they challenge offenses.
Now, another game late on Sunday is intriguing to me. It's always a good game, Dallas and Washington. You have two teams that are 3-3. They're trying to keep pace with the Eagles, who seem like they want to run away with this thing. What do you see out of this Dallas and Washington game?
Yeah, Dallas' run game, I think, sort of found its way a little bit last week. I thought their O-line played their best football of the season against San Francisco. The one thing that stands out when you really look at Dallas's offense is how good they are in the red zone. And that might seem cliched, but the reality is it's a red zone league. You get in the red zone, you need to score touchdowns. Dallas has been doing that, and they've been doing it with great execution, because I looked at all their red zone touchdowns this week, because I actually did a piece on it for the matchup show, and every red zone touchdown other than one was the result of execution of the play design. Only one was outside of structure where Prescott left the pocket. So that's a real tribute to Scott Linehan and the offense and how he puts together red zone plays. And then the other thing that really becomes a factor in the red zone is the read option. Prescott scored some touchdowns on read option in the red zone, and that's a real weapon for them.
And the last game I want to get your opinion on, Greg, is the Monday night game. And Trevor Siemian, the Broncos came in here. The Bills beat him back on September 24th, and that was a significant win at the time. But I wonder if Trevor Siemian has topped out. Has he hit his ceiling? What are we looking at with him?
Well, I think there's limitations, Murph. And this past game against San Diego was the perfect negative storm, as it were. They couldn't run with any sustaining consistency, and their O-line was overmatched. And when I say overmatched, I think I'm being kind. it was tough. It was a tough watch. And the one thing about Siemian is I think he can play with some rhythm and timing, but I don't think he's a great pocket mover. So if the pocket starts closing down on him, I don't think he has a lot that he can do. And then last week, the pocket closed down, his tackles. Garrett Bowles had a really hard time at left tackle. They were playing their third right tackle due to injury, Alan Barber, and he had a tougher time. So, I mean, it was, as I said, it was the perfect negative storm for Trevor Siemian.
Hey, Greg, we want to make mention that next week, you, of course, have been with NFL Films for close to 40 years, senior producer. And next week, NFL Films has produced a Football Life on, you know, Buffalo's own Jim Kelly. I know it'll air next week prior to the Bills Thursday night game. And I don't know if you've seen excerpts from it. We're told it is an outstanding look at the life and career of the great Bills Hall of Fame quarterback.
I'm going to see it this weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it. I had the pleasure of having dinner with Jim Kelly when he was the Maxwell Award winner a couple of years ago when he came in here, because he and Ron Jaworski are close friends. And the night before the event, when they sort of, you know, just get everybody together, I sat and had dinner with Jim, and it was a real treat. I mean, he's, you know, it's funny to see his guys mature, you know, and get older, and just their different worldview. Of course, unfortunately, he's had to go through some some cancer to have his worldview be a little different. But he's a terrific guy, and I love being around him, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that show.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing it, too. A Football Life, Jim Kelly on the NFL Network next week. Donald, you got Jim in here next Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Jim, so, Thurm. I mean,
it's going to be a good
is
show.
Is Thurm on the show with us?
Yeah. Be Hall of Famers all everywhere you look.
That's right. That's how I do it.
Thanks for this, Greg. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Friday. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too, guys. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
Greg Cosell is the executive producer analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN. It airs at Saturday, 8:30 in the morning on ESPN, Sunday at 6:30 a.m. ESPN. He's also senior producer for NFL Films, and we'll get some times and dates for that Football Life on Jim Kelly.
There's a select few people that can get all of those Hall of Famers in a room and sit at a desk. You couldn't get that done, Murph.
Only I got I a Hall of Famer in here today.
I mean, James Lofton. You had one, you know, but I'm talking about a bunch of them together, you know, to sit down and talk with me. Only me, Sean McDermott, you know, guys like us.
Yeah, good for you. I'll be listening intently when I'm on my way to the Meadowlands next week. Hey, our thanks to Greg for joining us on the line. The Bills have wrapped up practice today, and we're going to hear from Lorenzo Alexander coming up in the third and final hour of the show. We'll give you the update as soon as we get it on the practice participation and the status for Sunday. It's an interesting day, and I think sort of a downer of a day for the Bills family with the news that came out last night about tight end Logan Thomas. On Wednesday, he missed practice for what was described as personal reasons. There was no update there. And then last night, after returning to practice yesterday, Logan Thomas announced on Twitter that his daughter had been born prematurely and passed away on Tuesday night. Logan and his wife, Brandy, have four other sons. Credit to Logan Thomas for hanging in there and going to work in the midst of all of that. Sean McDermott was asked about it today. Actually, before he was even asked about it, McDermott started his Friday morning news conference mentioning Logan Thomas and his family tragedy.
I want to start off just by, mentioning my heartfelt condolences and our heartfelt condolences to Logan and the Thomas family on the loss of his daughter, and offers great perspective again for where we are, what we do, and we know how important it is, and it seems like the only thing at times, but it's certainly not the only thing, and we're going to offer our support and our love and wrap our arms around the Thomas family this time and for as long as they need it.
Sean McDermott on that. As the news conference continued, the head coach of the Bills was asked about Thomas's status for Sunday. He obviously was not here at practice on Wednesday, back yesterday, back here today. And what about Logan Thomas, the tight end, his status for Sunday? Here's what Sean McDermott said about that.
Right, the way it stands right now is Logan returned yesterday. I thought he had a good day. And, he's back in the building this morning, and we'll be back on this field this afternoon.
Can you imagine coming back to that person like that?
You get inspiration, you get perspective from a lot of situations, and in this case, inspiration. The way that he and his family have handled this just really, speaks volumes about who they are. And I am 100% confident that they will, use this to continue to, grow closer as a family. I was just happy to see Logan's smiling face in here yesterday. And not from a football standpoint at all, but more so just for him to be around and for us to, embrace him, and then for him to be around his teammates also.
From your perspective, how is he?
He seems to be handling it as well as anyone could at this point.
Terribly tragic news about Logan Thomas. I don't know him well. You may know him more than I do. Seems like a really good guy, good family man, clearly. And we send along our prayers and thoughts to Logan and his family. Very sad.
Yes, it's tough. It's tough. But, it's the one thing you could say is he's back in work, and this is probably for him himself a way to kind of take his mind off of it,
Move forward a little bit. All right, we'll continue on with the show in just a minute. We're going to talk about the halftime ceremony coming up on Sunday at New Era Field. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from One Bills Drive. The Bills getting set to play the Oakland Raiders on Sunday, an old AFL rivalry that has had twists and turns over the years. They're going to give away those magnets from Dunn Tire and Bridgestone Tires for the fans who come into the stadium. It is an old AFL rivalry, and one of the all-time greats of the Bills in the American Football League era will be honored at halftime. Cookie Gilchrist, the great Cookie Gilchrist, number 34, is going up on the Bills Wall of Fame. It took a while, but he's going up on the Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame at halftime. Some family members will be here. His former teammate, Booker Ederson, will talk on his behalf. There's a guy talking on his behalf in the on the Internet these days, on one of our favorite websites, the Talk of Fame Sports Network, comprised of a couple of Hall of Fame electors who look back into the history of pro football. One of them is Rick Goslin, longtime NFL writer for the Dallas Morning News. He wrote a post, went up last week, state your case, why Cookie Gilchrist is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration, pro football Hall of Fame consideration. Rick Goslin's on the Subway Fresh Take hotline for us right now. Rick, John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us here today.
Oh, my pleasure, especially to talk about Cookie.
Yeah. I think there's a sense here that many people in the pro football world forgot about Cookie Gilchrist. You could argue it's taken so long for him to go on the Bills Wall of Fame that some folks here forgot about him a little bit. Is that the case, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, he had falling out both with the CFL, or he'd be in their Hall of Fame, and then with, you know, Ralph Wilson and the Bills, and you know, he should have been the first guy they put on the Wall of Fame, and frankly, he should be in the CFL Hall of Fame, but he's, you know, Cookie had kind of a he had a bit of abrasive personality at times, and he was very outspoken. And I think because of that, he was punished by both the CFL and the Bills, and that's not right. I mean, this was I looked at Chip Cookie as almost a generational back. You know, Jim Brown, Herschel Walker, Bo Jackson. This was the type of talent that Cookie Gilchrist was. Unfortunately, the prime of his football career was played in Canada. And even though it's called the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it's really the NFL Hall of Fame.
Hey, Rick, if you could compare him to a back in today's game, for those of us who don't know who Cookie is or may not have seen film of him, who would you compare him to?
In today's game, I'm not sure that back exists. I think I'll take you back a little bit. Christian Akoya with more natural instincts. Mm-hmm. But there isn't a back you can compare to Cookie. This guy was an all-CFL pick as both a fullback and as a linebacker. This guy handled the place kicking. This guy returned punts and kickoffs. This guy did everything you could do on a football field. Unfortunately, the prime of his career was spent in Canada where people, you know, south of the border didn't see it. And you know, we saw his greatness when he comes to Buffalo. He's now 27. You know, back then, the wall for running backs was 28 years old. He got here as a 27-year-old, became the first back to rush for 1,000 yards in AFL history, AFL MVP, went on to win another rushing title with the Bills, helped the Bills win that first championship. I mean, this guy was a special player that has been forgotten in the pages of history.
Rick, the name that you most often hear compared to when you talk about Cookie Gilchrist is a guy who went to the Browns a couple of years after he was trying to get to the Browns, and that's Jim Brown. You have a great quote in your post on TalkOfFameNetwork.com about what Cookie said about Jim Brown once. Can you tell us that?
Yeah, Cookie, as you know, Cookie was signed by Paul Brown out of high school, and there aren't three people in the history of football that could make the jump from high school to football. And the NFL ruled that contract was not valid. He had to, you know, wait for his graduating class in college. Forget high school, college to get through. So he went to Canada. So that didn't work out for him in Cleveland. And when he got back stateside, you know, after all his records in Canada, he told Jim Brown, you know, if that contract had gone through and I was playing with the Browns, no one would end up in the NFL would know who Jim Brown is. and I'll tell you what, there are some people that saw Cookie play. I'm sure Larry Felser would be a good guy, would have been a good guy to talk to. But this guy was the Jim Brown of the AFL. This guy was every bit to the Bills what Jim Brown was to the Cleveland Browns. And this guy was a better backer, better blocker, and probably a better pass catcher than Jim Brown. This was a generational back that people have forgotten about.
You know, friends of Cookie Gilchrist and fans of his will tell you that Paul Brown did a real disservice to Cookie Gilchrist, you know, getting him on that contract way back out of high school. Do you see it that way, too?
Yeah, without question. This guy had over 100 scholarship offers. He could have gone anywhere he wanted. He could have gone to Ohio State, Penn State, you know, wherever he wanted to go. And once he signed that contract, he became a professional. He became ineligible for college scholarships. So he had to go to Canada. The only place he could play football. Started playing football actually in a rugby league in Canada for a couple of years before he was old enough to play in the CFL. So, yeah, I think if he had gone if he had not signed that contract, if Paul Brown had not done that to him, and he had gone to college, he'd have been the first overall pick of his draft, and he had been in the Hall, and probably the first pick of the draft, and he'd be in the Hall of Fame right now.
Paul Brown, pretty bright guy. Anybody know what he was thinking back then? Was it was that how great the talent was of high school age Cookie Gilchrist?
Well, he did have Marion Motley, yeah, the Hall of Fame running back, in front of him, and I think he tried to stash Cookie in Canada. You know, you're talking about a 17-year-old kid trying to play with men 23, 24, 25, 28, 30 years old. And, you know, Herschel, Bowe, and Cookie are probably the three guys that could have done it, but it's still a sizable jump. And he wasn't ready to play on a championship-caliber team. If the Browns had been like the Browns of today, he would have been a starter on that team. But he had, you know, half a dozen Hall of Famers on the roster, including one on the top of the depth chart. So, no, for a 17-year-old to last as long as he did, if he had gone to college, he'd be talked about in the same vein as Jim Brown and the great running backs of the day.
We're with Rick Gosselin, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, one of the hosts of the Talk of Fame Network. He has a post about Cookie Gilchrist, worthy of Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame consideration. One of the things, Rick, when we talked as voters on the Bills Wall of Fame committee way back in the spring, one of the things held against him was his relatively brief tenure here in Buffalo. Three seasons. I'm thinking it was like 42 games played in Buffalo. I know he had all that records and all that time spent other places. But, I mean, that's a legitimate reason to take a long look at his resume, right, to say, look, this is only three seasons.
Yeah, and that's a valid. But then on the flip side, when he got to Buffalo, he became the face of the franchise. He's the guy that powered the team to championship heights. You know, granted, he left. He's moved on to Denver in 65 when they won the second one. But without Gilchrist, there are no rings in Buffalo.
Yeah, good point. And the other thing, and not that the voters now held a grudge against him, but, you know, he and Mr. Wilson were at odds several times over the years. And I kind of look back at that era, and I was just a young kid when Cookie was playing here. But right. It seemed to me Cookie was kind of in the same mold as some of the great emerging civil rights leaders in the sports world back then, like Bill Russell of the Celtics and some of the others. And maybe there was people who thought that, you know, that was too much, and maybe they held that against him. What do you think?
I think Cookie was at odds with a lot of people back then. You know, he was a special athletic talent, and he knew it, and he used that as his farm. You know, the 65 AFL All-Star game. He's the guy that led the protest because they wanted to segregate the hotels. They wanted to put white players in one hotel in New Orleans, black players in the other. He was the guy that led the protest that forced that game to move to Houston. And he took a very strong stand. You know, they wanted to put him in the CFL Hall of Fame. He thought that he was exploited and there was racism in the CFL, and he turned that down. I mean, how many people turned down a Hall of Fame? Can you imagine somebody turning down the Pro Football Hall of Fame, you know, in America? No. But Cookie turned it down in the CFL. And I wish they'd go back now that he's gone and recognize Cookie for what he was in Canada, one of the greatest players ever to suit up there, and put him in that Hall of Fame at this point.
Well, Rick, what are the chances of Cookie Gilchrist someday going in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? It'd have to be a Veterans Committee decision at this point, right?
Yeah, I think he'll remain a long shot because the small window of his career. You know, I say that, but then, you know, we put in Terrell Davis based on essentially three Hall of Fame seasons. And I think Cookie had, you know, that in the AFL. But I think it's a long shot at this point. I'm on the senior committee, and I've got a list of 80 players in the senior pool. We get to bring out one or two a year. I got 65 all-decade players that have never been discussed that deserve to have their cases heard, just as Cookie deserves to have his case heard. But in the senior committee, when you bring out one or two a year, it's very difficult, very difficult. Everybody in the senior pool is a long shot, and that's where Cookie is right now. If Cookie had played, got to the Bills in 60 and played those 2 years there and won his, you know, MVP awards, his rushing titles, and played, you know, 6-7 years and been a great player in Buffalo, I think he'd have a much better chance now than just looking at the 3 or 4 year window we're looking at right now.
Well, as our mutual friend, the late Larry Felser, used to say, it should be difficult to get in the Hall of Fame, right? It's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of the Very Good.
I'll tell you what, though. You take a snapshot of those three-year window when he was in Buffalo, that was a Hall of Fame running back.
Yeah. Rick, thanks for this. Good talking with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good weekend.
Rick Gosselin is a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. He is a host on the Talk of Fame Radio Network, has a post on the website, talkoffamenetwork.com. State your case why Cookie Gilchrist is worthy of Hall of Fame consideration going in the Bills Wall of Fame this Sunday. But what about the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Rick Goslin making a strong case for Cookie to go in. We'll see.
It's tough, man, because he had, you know, he played, what, 3 years here, short career here. Obviously, you know, he had a great career up there in Canada, and he played rugby as well. You know, he was such a good athlete, and we get to see the highlights of him. But for him to say it's a long shot that he would get in, that's tough.
Yeah, I'm sure it is a long shot. We thank Rick for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Donovan and I back with more. We want to plug back into the Bills-Raiders matchup itself, and you're welcome to join us. What's the key for the Bills to knock off Oakland? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Lorenzo Alexander coming up after 2. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Friday at One Bills Drive. Lorenzo Alexander coming up after the top of the hour. It's a Friday, Donald. Can you feel it? I mean, we're just cycling through great guests and keeping it going here.
It's our last hour of the week.
Almost, yeah.
1:50 now.
I'm feeling it. We had James Lofton, Mark Kelso, Greg Cosell, Rick Goslin on Cookie Gilchrist. If you miss any of this, it'll be up on our website, buffalobills.com, coming up in a couple of minutes. As we said, Lorenzo Alexander coming up. And we'll have NFL True or False, a couple of other things coming up in the final hour. We do want to engage with you. Our Twitter poll today deals with Sunday's matchup and how you think it might go. And what is the best thing the Bills can do to ensure a victory over the Raiders? What's the biggest key for a Buffalo Bills victory over the Raiders on Sunday? That is our Twitter poll. It's been up for almost just about two full hours now. And so far, almost half of you, 46%, say finishing drives with touchdowns. 37% say control the Raiders' offensive weapons. 15% say get that solid run game going, continue what they did last week against Tampa Bay. 2% have something else in mind. Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We will engage with that in the remaining hour and 10 minutes of the show. But, Donald, last night's game, Greg Cosell was laughing about it. It wasn't a great game. I enjoyed it, everything I watched from the second quarter on. Love seeing the Dolphins get embarrassed like that, and they were embarrassed. They were totally embarrassed last night.
It's like lint or something right here in front of my face. It's the funniest thing ever. It was, what was it, 40-0?
40-0.
I didn't expect a 40-0 end of that game. But, you know, everything that went on within that game was just funny to me. You know, obviously the fact that they were getting blown out, but everything else with that happened. And I'm sure that's what we're about to talk about.
You think it was funny what happened
to
Joe
Flacco?
It was hilarious. What happened to Joe Flacco?
No, not what happened to Joe Flacco, but what happened after that with Ndamukong Suh and that was all of this stuff.
So, yeah, Flacco with the concussion suffered on the hit from Kiko Alonso. It happened, Flacco was playing a great game. It was a 3rd and 10. Flacco down around the 20-yard line. Looks like he's going to run for a first down. He runs around the right side. Then starts to slide. Very late, I thought. Kiko Alonso, who we all know flies around the field, hit him up around the head, hit him with the shoulder slash arm, and knocked him out. Knocked him out of the game. He suffered a concussion. The Dolphins got a 15-yard penalty on that play, an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Ravens coach John Harbaugh came out to yell at Alonso. There were several fights after that, too. But a lot of discussion on the broadcast last night, even discussion today about, you know, what's the proper course now for the league with Kiko Alonso? 15-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct? I'm good with that. You want to protect quarterbacks, but I guess we're right back to where we usually get with these. You know, to what extent do you want to protect quarterbacks? Does this require a fine, an ejection last night? Does it require that? Does it require, some kind of suspension from gameplay for Kiko? I say no. I say 15 yards is enough. I acknowledge the danger that Flacco was in. I acknowledge the fact that Kiko's hit was illegal in the course of the game. But, Flacco knew where the first down sticks were. Kiko knew where the first down sticks were. Flacco, start your slide earlier.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I have to agree with you here. You know, first of all, he didn't lead with his helmet. He hit him with his shoulder. And it's hard for those defensive guys when a quarterback or whoever is going down to the ground to change, you know, that impact and where you're coming in to hit. He's going down, you're coming in to make the hit, and he ends up hitting him on the head. So should he be fined? Yeah. Should he have been flagged? Yeah. But he shouldn't be ejected. He shouldn't be suspended or anything like that.
After the game, Kiko said, it's a bang-bang play. I hope he's all right. I really do. Alonso Kiko said there's no way he could have avoided the hit. And it's a good quote from Kiko. He said, when a guy slides – The target is very small. Kiko went on to say, I just think his slide was the second late, which is why I hit him, to be honest with you. At first, I was anticipating he was going to slide, and then it got to a point where I was like, I got to him because he slid too late. Yeah. I think that's a pretty clear explanation of what's going through Kiko's head in a bang-bang, you know, split-second decision.
What else is he supposed to do? Yeah. You know, if you're a quarterback and you want to run, you become a runner at that point. You can get hit. I don't know what else, you know, the league can't come in and change some rules and say, what, oh, now you can't hit quarterbacks when they're running. No, you're running. You decided to slide late, and you got hit. You know, I mean, that's just like anybody else on the field. If I catch a pass and I slide late, I'm going to get hit. The quarterback is running. He became a runner, so he's
going for
hit.
A first down.
Exactly, Kiko's you're going for a first down. I'm trying to stop you from getting that first down.
Yeah. You can't wrap him up in bubble wrap or anything, you know. No. But it led to a lot of ugliness the rest of the game. Obviously, John Harbaugh got on Kiko's face, and Ndamukong Suh of the Dolphins never one to shy away from a scrap. That's his MO. Unlike Kiko's, by the way, Kiko's never had incidents like this. Mm-hmm. And Ndamukong Suh has in the past, and as things got heated up, and Ndamukong Suh saw a fit to get up in Ryan Mallett's grill and grab him by the neck, essentially. That was pretty ugly.
This is what was funny to me. You know, when you look at it close up, he looked like one of those club bouncers that just throws people out of the club. Like, I mean, get out of here. You know, like that's how he did him. It was the funniest thing ever. When you see Ryan Mallett's face and they close up on his face, he wanted to get back in his face, but, you know, he's like, nah, I'm going to just go ahead and let this one go.
It was ugly. It was a bad game. It was non-competitive, and it was ugly. Everything the NFL wants, right?
No. I mean, that's like that's everything. That's like total disrespect for you to, like, grab somebody by the throat and just throw them out of the club like
well,
that.
But Mallett led with his chest there.
I know,
he was
exactly.
To be the tough guy there.
You know, you want to come in my face? Let's do it then.
Yeah, pretty ugly. Pretty bad game. And I loved a lot of it because of the outcome and score. I think the Dolphins are frauds, folks. But we got away before – what do we got, December 17th?
December 17th. That's right. You know what else is on December 17th?
What, your birthday?
That's right. All right, the star was born.
A break here. Lorenzo Alexander will put Donald in his place when we return for the third and final hour of the show, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Bills finished off practice about an hour and 15 minutes ago on the turf inside New Era Field. That's where they will play the Oakland Raiders on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Already ruled out for Sunday's game, cornerback E.J. Gaines with his hamstring, tight end Charles Clay with his knee, linebacker Ramon Humber with his thumb. They are all out. Safety Jordan Poyer going to be listed as day-to-day, according to Sean McDermott, before practice today. They got him some limited work for Richie Incognito. Raiders have some injuries of their own, and their injury report will be interesting this week with cornerback David Amerson not practicing at all yesterday. Safety Carl Joseph did not practice yesterday as well. Raiders might have some issues and some people to decide on as far as playing participation on Sunday. They'll make their way to to Buffalo today, probably walk through somewhere here in Buffalo tomorrow, and then kick it off 1 o'clock, the Bills and the Raiders, 1 o'clock Sunday at New Era Field. The broadcast starts at 1 o'clock kickoff, 11 a.m. pregame on the Bills Radio Network. Retired receiver Anquan Boldin has expressed interest in playing again. The Bills have sent a letter to his agent giving him permission to explore trades with other teams. Boldin, 37 years old, announced on August 20th, less than 2 weeks after he signed a one-year deal with the Bills, that he was leaving football to focus on social activism, but now he's decided he wants to play, and the Bills have given his agent permission to seek a trade with certain conditions. Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco suffering a concussion last night in Baltimore's 4-0 rout of the Miami Dolphins. Kiko Alonso delivered a gruesome shot to Flacco's head late in the first half when Flacco was trying to slide to the ground on a run. It was a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. It remains to be seen if there's a fine or anything worse coming Kiko's way. Buffalo Sabres returned to practice this morning at Harbor Center, coming off back-to-back games on Tuesday and Wednesday. They host the San Jose Sharks tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock at the KeyBank Center. Zemgus Girgensen returned to the lineup Wednesday after he was out 3 games with a lower body injury. And baseball tonight, Game 3 of the World Series. It's one apiece, the Dodgers and the Astros. And Houston will put Lance McCullers on the mound in Houston tonight. Dodgers go with right-hander Yu Darvish. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio on Friday afternoon as we get talking about the Bills and the Raiders. We have been all afternoon, and the guy who puts a cap on it every Friday joins us in studio now with the lowdown. Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown. Hello, Lorenzo.
Hey, what's going on? You guys doing well?
Doing great.
Staying warm in here.
It's not that cold out.
It's cold enough. I'm out in it practicing. Maybe that's a little bit different.
I hear you.
You and Donald good? What's going on here? I mean, it was like a Twitter brush fire.
I don't know what happened. You know, I texted, you know, because I have Twitter and I listen to you guys and said I agree with you as far as him saying that, yeah, I forgot the player that you said was going to be good. One of the side, Poyer. Oh, yeah, I said that back as soon as he was going to be dominant. Yeah, yeah. I was like, nobody remembers you saying that. And I agreed with John. I was like, I'm not quite sure. I think I'm on John's side.
Yeah.
Just pull the footage. We tape everything.
Pull footage.
You have producers. You know producers.
I know. I tried to get them to go back. What we're talking about.
You tried?
They're like, yeah, we don't have a system to go that far back. Well, like, come on.
Well, you can't just say things if you can't prove it. So, and then from there, he tried to, you know, talk bad about defensive players aren't able to pick the ball up. Scoop it up because we're not comfortable being around the ball, obviously not true because you love Poyer, you love Micah Hyde. So then I came back at him because, you know, sometimes when he starts talking about defense, he's an offensive guy, doesn't really sound knowledgeable. So I just hit him again where it kind of hit him and he got sensitive.
Yeah.
Because he wish you a professional. You carry him a lot of times on the show, especially when you're talking about defense. So I had to hit him there. And then, you know, it's like Big Brother, Little Brother.
Are you not done? Wait a minute. Let him go.
It's like Big Brother, Little Brother. That's all it is.
He's just
going to
keep going.
So I just have to hit him every time.
He has a venting session right now. A venting session on air.
The tweet, Lorenzo, was epic. And it resonated with a lot of people. What did it say?
It resonated with a lot of people, which I don't know why. I got to figure this out.
The tweet said, what was it? The more I hear Donald Jones.
The more I hear Donald Jones talking about defense, the more I understand
he doesn't know.
Yeah, see, you know it better than me.
It's right
there. Oh, they put it up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, man, that's great.
It's not great.
By the way,
I got a lot of likes and retweets, so a lot of people
are trying to add his.
So some people agree.
What about the last sentence? Thank goodness for John Murphy show.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have your own Twitter, so it's more thank goodness for John Murphy.
Right.
So you carry it on. Yeah,
that's fine. And then Donald, apparently he struck a nerve. Right? Because you felt compelled to keep going back and forth with Lorenzo.
I mean, I stopped after that. I didn't even reply.
That's how
you got somebody.
That's how he does.
When they keep replying, they hit you a couple of times, they're looking, they're searching, they're looking for something.
He's one of the people that are like, you know, bet you win something and walk away.
Yeah,
like,
that's all I got to do.
You can't walk away yet. We're not done.
I'm done. Drop the mic.
We always talk about those NBA fights where players go out, throw punches.
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody grabbed
Mallet last night. Yeah. Ryan Mallet got in Dominican Sue's face, and then he got yoked up.
Right.
So is it good now? Are you guys good?
Oh, we always good.
Yeah, always.
We always good.
Do we need to work this out before we move on?
Just Big Brother, Little Brother type spats, and, you know, okay. I just handle it, you know.
You handle it well.
We're good.
Feel free to keep tweeting that kind of stuff in.
Trying to instigate it.
No, I think it's great. I think it keeps you in check a little bit.
Somebody just retweeted it now.
Yeah.
Look at this. This is terrible.
It's awesome. Man.
It was great.
Good.
The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. Before we move to that, Lorenzo, we were talking about it going into the last segment about Kiko Alonso's hit on Joe Flacco last night. Bang, bang play, split second decisions being made. What's your take on that?
You know, obviously, if you're a Ravens fan, you think it's dirty. And obviously, if you're a Miami Dolphins fan, you thought it was a great play from a linebacker just trying to hustle and make a play. You know, I've played defense for a long time now. And these type of plays are hard, especially with a lot of these quarterbacks. It's bang, bang. It's, you know, you're trying to prevent him from getting the first down. And we actually had a play earlier this year where we had a linebacker pull up on the sideline versus Cam Newton because he thought he was going to go out of bounds, didn't want to hit him. And Cam puts his foot in the ground and gets the first down and like 10 more yards. So for a defender, you always want to err on the side of being aggressive. These type of plays, you know, if I'm his teammate, I'm like, hey, man, I understand, just got to make it and, you know, maybe try to change the angle and miss him next time. But I don't think that's a dirty play. And you even heard C.J. Mosley after the game said he didn't think it was dirty just because of how quick it happened, the bang-bang-ness of it.
No, how hard is it when a player is going down to the ground like that?
It's hard because you can even see Kiko was lowering. You're lowering your target as it is, and then when he slides at the last minute, he lowers his head right to where you're aiming, and there's no way at that. Once you leave your feet, there's no way you're going to, you know, reposition or change. And so you just have to kind of eat it, take the fine, take the penalty, and kind of move on. But you can't allow that to slow you down. And if you know Kiko at all, I've been around him just competing against him. He's not a guy that's known for being dirty and trying to do things that are inappropriate or outside the confines of great competition.
You just said something that struck me. You said, as a defender, you always err on the side of being aggressive.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say you err. I mean, most people would say you err on the side of being cautious.
No.
Not playing defense in the NFL.
Not on defense, because that's when you end up stuff happening where you let a guy go too early. I mean, I've seen it, because with the quarterback rule, especially around the quarterback, a defender gets in there, goes to grab, or you're at his ankles and you're not quite sure. He ends up spinning out or something, and then the coverage breaks down, and it's a big play, a touchdown. So as a defender, we're taught to always err on the side of aggression, especially with McDermott. If it's an aggressive penalty, he can live with that. But when you start playing hesitant, you're going to get beat a lot, and you're not going to last long in this league.
The issue is with defenders, you know, sometimes in practice, they don't know when to chill in practice. So they still err on that side of aggression in practice, and then, you know.
Go ahead, John.
I feel like I'm the referee. Call here on this issue from Steve in Tonawanda. Mm-hmm. Steve, go ahead. You have something to add to this conversation.
Yeah, I was actually calling in regards to the hit, because if you look at Kiko Alonso, and you don't hear his name ever for something like this. And I feel like if it was someone maybe on the edge of like Burfitt or somebody who is maybe more known to be a dirty player, and that's why I agree with, you know, Alexander with what he's saying, with Kiko's not known for this at all. And that was my point, is I was very shocked to hear, because I didn't see the hit, I was asleep, but I, you know, to hear that the hit happened from him, and it kind of was shocking to hear that it was actually Kiko Alonso who did that. And one more thing I wanted to say, because I feel like this is the only way I can communicate it, is my condolences to Logan Thomas and his family as well. So that's just something I wanted to pass along.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that should be something the league will take notice of, right?
This is not a repeat offender. I mean, a repeat offender. I mean, your reputation is everything. I mean, in life and in this league, and depending on who you are and what your past is, you're going to be fined accordingly or suspended accordingly. But since, like you said, Kiko has not been known for this. Obviously, just trying to make a play, and it happens. I've had a couple of personal fouls in my career, too. But, I mean, you know it's not dirty, because that's not what I'm known for doing. But when it's a guy that has a history of doing it, even when it's like, oh, I can see that, you're like, man, that dude probably did that on purpose. You know, that's just what you're thinking, just because that's what he's known for doing. And that's just the nature of the business, and when you're dealing with anybody in any field.
Caller mentioned the tragedy with Logan Thomas and his family. I'm sure it's something you guys as a group have discussed.
Yeah. Well, you know, our families are pretty close. Obviously, he has four little boys that have hung out with my kids and come over the house, Bible studies and stuff. Our families and our wives have hung out a lot. So we're just trying to be there for them right now, trying to help them any way we can, whether it's having the kids come over so they can have time together, you know, bringing food over, help with dinner, just the little things that you sometimes take for granted that it's hard to do when you're going through something of this nature. So just continue to pray, continue to bring him in, put our arms around him, him and his wife and the family, and just want to continue to be there and support him.
We're with Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, the lowdown. We're going to get to some of the elements of the Bills and the Raiders. I want to ask you about your brother. Wide receiver out west, Austin, who's committed, or is it committed yet, or just an offer?
No, he isn't committed. He's actually at prep school. He's at St. Thomas More in the New England area.
Okay.
He went to Capital Christian, which is in Sacramento, Northern Cal. He was a basketball player, AAU skilled player, you know, played on top 10 teams in the nation for a long time, and really didn't get into football until really his junior year. Junior and senior year, had a dynamic year, but didn't really dive in until the basketball scholarships didn't roll in. So he's doing a great job up there. He actually came out this past summer, worked out with me in Virginia with me and my trainer, Randall Cobb, kind of took him under his wing, teaching him some things. But he has some just great natural ability. He's way more athletic than I ever was. He's 6'6", 215, can jump out the gym. Once he really gets in the weight room, though, he's probably going to be more of your, glorified tight end, like a Jimmy Graham, mm-hmm. Gronk type, because he still has some room to fill out. But he's going to be – listen, I keep an eye out for his name, Austin Alexander, because he's going to be a guy that's going to get somewhere, get a scholarship, and I think be in the league at some point.
He got offered by UB, huh?
Yeah, UB. Well, off my tweet and the thing I sent out in the on the huddle, which is real cool these days. You didn't have that back when I was playing.
No.
You can just, you know, pull your highlights from the huddle, and he had made like a quick little highlight tape, and I tweeted it out. I'm trying to get Cal to offer him, but obviously UB is here. They made a connection. Actually, Bobby Babich, our mm-hmm. DB coach, knows one of the guys up there. So they called me and was like, hey, we want to offer your brother and put him in contact. And they offered him 2 nights ago.
And he's a junior?
How many offers?
He's a senior. Okay. This is his prep year. So he's 19. He graduated high school last year. He went to prep school to get his grades and mature a little bit just so he could qualify for, you know, a school like Cal or anywhere. You know, I just want to make sure he goes to the best situation for him.
So we're talking February is where he makes his – that's when signing day is, right?
Yes, I don't know. I guess it's still February.
Will he wait
till
then, or does he want to make his decision soon?
Knowing the kids these days, he's gonna wait it out. He's gonna get all five visits in. I'm trying to get him out of that. But you know, what does big brother know? I don't know nothing.
I'm going through it with my little cousin, but he decided to commit to Florida State. He had like 60 offers.
Oh wow!
And he was like, "Nah, I'm done with it. I just want to commit and get it over with, so I can enjoy my senior year."
That'd be great for him. So I mean, but he had a senior year last year. It's a little different. But he likes the attention. So I'm just trying to. I'm on him, texting him, man. We still got to work. You know, all that stuff. Just trying to get his mind right.
He talked junk. I'm better than you ever was.
Oh, man, all the time, man. You can't dunk, so you can't do this. I'm better, you know. You can't guard me. It's all the stuff. All the stuff.
Can you give Donald his number so he can gang up on you and help you? That's where you're going with this, right? Give me some dirt.
I wasn't even thinking that.
You can't go on and hit him up on Twitter. It's like off too smooth, man.
Hey, one more question before we get to the lowdown. Did I see you popped up like on the morning announcements at Pembroke School down the road there in Genesee County?
Yeah, one of the teachers, Mr. Brown there, tweeted me out. Actually, Preston has been another guy that's went out to the school to visit. And went out and hung out with the kids one day and just signed some autographs and talked. And this year he said he was having a reading challenge that they do annually and asked me would I help sponsor it by, you know, whether I do tickets or gloves, sports memorabilia, just to inspire and give the kids some incentives. So we've partnered on that. And I forgot what game they're coming to. It might be the Patriots game. But the kids have read over 25 million words. I don't know what that equates in the books, but that's the entire school. So it's impressive. So any way I can be a part of helping kids want to read more, getting the books, and inspired to be great. I want to be a part of it.
You got a lot of balls in the air, man. How do you – you do. You got a lot going on.
Well, I got a great wife, too. You know, she holds me down at the house and allows me to kind of be all over the place at times. So,
yeah, it was – you know, one time I was down at – I was downtown at Spot Coffee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking. I walk in, and I'm like, oh – I mean, that's Lorenzo there. He had a big life-size thing of Lorenzo.
Yeah, Spot Coffee's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm an ambassador. I do. I mean, I like the local coffee shop down there. They know me in there. They know what I want when I go in there on Saturday mornings now, so it's kind of cool. And then they also chipped in with my foundation, gave me a $5,000 grant. So, you know, it's a great relationship there.
So I think, you know, the team was on the road, so I just took a selfie next to it. Like, yeah, hey, Lorenzo, you
missed me,
cool.
Huh? I know.
You know what?
I have to mention now that Tim Hortons is the official coffee sponsor of the Buffalo
Bills. I'm glad you mentioned that. I have some Tim Hortons right here.
You do? Yeah. I'll let the folks at Spot see that. All right, let's get down to business. The lowdown as we look ahead to the matchup against the Raiders. And the first thing you've got as one of the things the Bills have to do is handle, speaking of UB, handle number 52 over there.
Yeah, Khalil Mack has obviously been a defensive player candidate, you know, since he's been in this league. Is dominant on the edge. He does it all. Plays the run, rushes the passer at a high elite level. And it's just a guy that can wreck your entire offensive game plan if you allow him to get in a groove and a rhythm early. So, you know, you have to do a lot of things, mess with his eyes, you know, do a lot of hawk runs, which means you line a tight end up opposite of him off the ball and kind of bring the tight end back across when you're running some of that zone stuff just to kind of get him hesitant, boot at him. Use Tyrod. You just got to keep him off balance as much as you can, chipping him with a tight end, a running back, just throughout the entire game. Much of the same way when we played Von Miller, right? You know, kind of just keep him out of a natural flow, changing up the snap count, just a lot of different things like that. So I'm confident in our offensive line and our running backs as far as getting that done. And if we're able to do that, we can create some offensive rhythm. We'll be just fine.
When you say you got to mess with his eyes, what do you mean that? What's
just,
that mean?
You know, whether you're flashing him with a running back where he has to take a peek and take his eyes off the tackle, bringing a tight end, like I said earlier, back across. Do I have to spill this? Am I forcing it? Run some boot actions just to slow him down. Anytime that you have a lot of things crossing your face and you're not quite sure where your key is and not just giving me one key, you just read the tackle, and you give me a couple of different keys, it slows you down as a defender, especially if you may mess up on a boot one time, or maybe a zone read and Tyrod breaks containment on him, then you slow him down for the rest of the game because he doesn't want that to happen again.
You know, it's always funny to me when you get guys like Khalil Mack or Von Miller or Lorenzo Alexander.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
You know, so when you get these guys who are very good at rushing the passer, how they end up one-on-one with tackles. And I know it can happen throughout the course of a game, but it's like,
right.
Why did you leave him one-on-one?
Well, these days, most defensive coordinators move guys around. So Khalil line up left side, right side. Sometimes he may be on a guard. Mm-hmm. And then they have the linebacker showdown, forcing the offensive line because you're not quite sure if the linebacker's coming or not, and forcing a 5-0 protection. And then there's your one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And then if you have – they have some other guys. Obviously, Bruce Irvin is on the other side.
Right.
They're solid in the middle as well. So you can't always just say, I'm a double Khalil. You have to change some things up or you may get beat some other places, especially if those guys are playing well. But a lot of times, guys move around. I mean, you've seen that with us where I'm outside sometimes. Sometimes I'm inside. Sometimes I'm on the other side with Jerry. And that's how you create the matchups that you want. Because back in the day, you normally just play left and right. Now they find the GOAT or the weak link on the offensive line, mm-hmm. and they try to exploit him by putting the best pass rusher that you have on
right,
him.
Right.
And that's just how the game has evolved, just to get more production out of your best players.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us for the lowdown as we work our way through his keys for the game on Sunday, Bills and Raiders. Number two, affect Derek Carr's play. You can have a direct impact on
that. Yeah, I can. And, you know, I think most of the time you think about, just rushing the passer or getting sacks. But you don't necessarily have to do that to affect him. You know, having Marcel and Kyle push the pocket, pushing guys back into him to affect his vision or affect his ability to step up. Getting your hands up when he's trying to throw the ball. Maybe you get a tip pass. You know, sometimes that messes with a quarterback's mind. Disguise on the back end, showing, maybe a split safety look to a single high or two safety high and then coming down and playing, so just switching up. Maybe we're blitzing. Maybe we're mm-hmm. not. All those things to get him to slow down a little bit, to be unsure, and not get in a great rhythm. Because as he goes, their offense goes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have Amari Cooper and Crabtree and two great backs in Washington and Rashard. But if he's not playing well, if you got him uneasy, everything else is out the window because he's the engine that drives really that team.
I've watched a couple of Raiders games this week, and I've yet to find a real, weakness in his game, Derek Carr. You know, he does pretty much everything pretty well.
He's good. I mean, it comes down to, like I said, just trying to affect him, and you have to impose your will. Obviously, his supporting cast is really good as well, so that raises his game. But you have to continue to attack him, continue to hit him. Obviously, he's been hampered with some injuries in the past. But you just got to just keep just trying to keep him off of a great rhythm because he does things well, but their offense hasn't really gelled until really last week.
Right,
it's
when
they kind of exploded and would look like the offense of last year. So if we can kind of get him back in that mode where they were maybe in those first couple of weeks of the season where they weren't quite sure who they were and weren't really operating on a high level, we'll give ourselves a great chance. And then catching the balls that come to us as far as turnovers and stuff.
Yeah. You know, as you say, affect Derek Carr's play is one of yours. You know, mine was consistently hit Derek Carr. Just so you know, I know
similar.
A little bit of something.
That's
that
similar.
Just a little bit
That's
of something that I'm talking
offense.
About. I'm just saying. I know a little bit of something.
Okay.
But what do you see out of this offensive line, though? I mean, you said they haven't really gelled. This offensive line last year was
the best
talked
offensive
about
line.
It.
Right.
You know, and now it's like, what's going on with this offensive line?
And they still have that capability because, I mean, I think they have four of the five guys still there. Mm-hmm. I mean, outside of the right tackle, mm-hmm. I think it's different this year. They just have to just get on the same page. Sometimes they're just a little bit out of sync. And then as far as pass rush, if you can get them in something that they like to spread out and go empty so they don't have a back there chipping anybody, mm-hmm. and Derek Carr likes to go down the field. So you can exploit them on some one-on-one matchups as well. I think it's kind of been some of their issue. But these guys – are physical and they are bullies and play late through the whistle. A guy, Lee Smith, who you're familiar with, is there. It's the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, the whistle is blowing and it's one, two, three more steps. So I was telling guys this week, make play through the whistle, not to the whistle, play through it. Because Osimile, 70, 72, Penn, and Lee Smith, they going to fight you all the way and try to embarrass you after the whistle is blown. So I was just telling guys like Matt, Milano, Tanner, guys that'll be out there, they're not used to it, that these guys, they're not playing. They're going to push you in your back and doing all the dirty stuff. So just make sure that you're ready. So that's one thing that we also have to kind of be aware of throughout the game.
When Lee first came in, you know, I was here with him, and he always was getting into fights in practice,
yeah,
in games, and it's like, Lee, what are you doing, man? Like, chill out.
He's just a big nag.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, he has to make up for his lack of athleticism, right? And I tell Lee this all the time, because I was with him in Oakland for that whole year, just practicing against him, great dude, but he's just always on you, like, get off of me, man. You're trying to rip off, grabbing you, holding you, like, pushing you back when you get away.
Like, yeah.
The ball is down. He's still dry. Like, hey, Lee, the play is over, dude. Yeah. It's over. You know? So, and that 70-72 in Lee is all the same way when it comes to that. And it can frustrate you. And then if you're not ready for it, it can put you in a funk early, especially if they catch you and put you on your back. If you watch some film, they flat backing some cats. My boy Rackpo in Tennessee, a similar got him once. And if you get hit like that early, mm-hmm. it can put something in your mouth, man. I don't know if I'm ready for this. So we got to be the ones to hit them in the mouth and pushing them back and playing through the whistle on their side of the line of scrimmage.
Lee Smith used to bring in, every year he was here, homemade moonshine. Little mason jars. Did he ever do that?
He's from Tennessee or something?
West Virginia? Yeah. I don't know.
I know he lives in Tennessee.
Yeah, he has a house down there. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
He was out there somewhere.
I never saw the moonshine. He must have been giving that to somebody else.
All right.
Janikowski is giving that to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like your year in Oakland? I mean, you grew up out there.
Yeah,
so
I really enjoyed it. I grew up a 49ers fan because they were in L.A., but when I came back, you know, my mom got to see me play every week. My family was there. I enjoyed the silver and black. It was a good time.
I want to get back to that in a moment, but let's finish up the lowdown. And you talk about your third topic is Cordarrelle Patterson. How about this stat? Donald and I were shaking our heads. 30.4 yards per kickoff return average through his career. Only one higher is the great Gale Sayers.
Oh, Gale Sayers. Yeah. Oh, wow.
You know, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I've played against him maybe two times, and I think he's returned the ball. And I don't want to put this out here, but he's taken one to the house on me each time. But
really?
I mean, he's just dynamic like that. And he kind of goes kind of under the radar as far as being a dynamic playmaker, because obviously he was a first rounder, supposed to be a receiver, and now he's kind of a special teamer. But he's up there as far as return men in his league and who's played in his league in the last 10 years as far as impacting games.
Yeah.
You know, big, strong, very dynamic. And that's not to even include his play as a gunner on punt. You know, they have Marquette King, who's booming the ball out there. And he's such a big guy. He's beating a lot of the one-on-one matchups, even the vices, and going down there and really helping them flip the field. So his impact in special teams, both on coverage and kick returns, we definitely have to nullify.
You know, I just got to let you know that was one of my keys to the game. I just know a little something that I'm talking about. I got to know a little something. I think you've been hacking my phone or something, man.
Can you just not kick to Cordarrelle Patterson? Like, how's kept movement through the end zone? Is it as simple as that?
You can, but, I mean, we are in Buffalo, so I don't know how the wind is going to be blowing. Yeah. So it depends. But, yeah, I mean, we used to do that to Hester back in the day, just punt the ball out of bounds or kick the ball out of the end zone or just, you know, just different ways just to kind of keep them off balance so he can't field the ball clean and take to the house. But I tell you, we did that when I was in Oakland. We squibbed him, and they had a return, and they just got everybody on the outside, and he took it to the house. So it's really, you know, when you're a great player, you're a great player. It's just hard to stop. So we have to always just play our matchups and not really worried about, okay, how can we not keep him out of the game? Just – win your one matchups and then tackle the guy, you know, and not be intimidated by what he has done in the past.
How good is Marquette King?
He is solid. I mean, when I was there, he was just kind of coming into his own, had a little bit of inconsistencies, but now he's kind of really found his way. Obviously, he does all the Twitter stuff.
He got his name out there, branded himself.
But as a player, he's probably one of the best punters in this league as far as directional, especially in that plus 50 gray area. He can really – he has the capability of pinning you back. Having that coffin kick, as they call it, and getting it right out at the 2 or 3 yard line. Mm-hmm. So he's been a very dynamic player, and his athletic is all get up. And you have to watch out for some of the fakes that he has up his sleeve as well.
You grew up out there, as we said. You played the 1 year with Oakland. Is there anything to that silver and black mystique? I mean, is it all just baloney? And
when you go into there, I don't know about on the field, you know, as far as players. It's not like when they had Jack Tatum back there roaming.
Right.
I don't know if they still have it like that. But if you go to Oakland Stadium and you walking through and you see all that silver and black.
Stadium's a dump.
You have all the smells in the air and, you know, people flipping you the bird and talking crazy to you and the black hole. It's real when you go to Oakland. I think it's a little, especially if they're winning and playing well. Yeah. I mean, they got it rocking out there.
Does Marshawn fit that that mistake.
Yeah, that is. I mean, he is Oakland, right? Yeah. He epitomizes everything Oakland stands for, you know, tough, rugged, blue-collar, grinder, physical, that whole mentality. So he definitely fits, and, it was a great move, obviously, with them moving the team, too, to have a hometown grown boy that's, you know, possibly could be a Hall of Famer come and sign with your team and play there.
You know, he fits it. How big of a loss is he to that team? It's not like he's been balling out.
Right, yeah, and I don't know if they you know, struggling trying to figure out who they are with Marshawn, because they are a Derek Carr-driven team, stretch the field versus let's hand the ball off and go off the play action. So I think they struggle with that, and maybe that's why they kind of found the rhythm, because once Marshawn left the game, they don't have to worry about trying to find him, give him touches, and now they can get into what they really want to do as an offense or what they had been doing last year before he arrived.
Yeah.
Lorenzo, thanks. Stay healthy. Thanks for coming by. We always love talking to you. You know, stay out of Donald's way.
Oh, yeah,
if you can.
I'll try to stay on his good side.
Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown every Friday around this time. Thanks for joining us. Donald and I back with more, including Coffee with a Coach, Tim Horton's Coffee with a Coach, when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Thanks to Lorenzo Alexander. Here's an interesting tweet from Crow. Lorenzo signed autographs at Spot Coffee for my grandfather and me in Hamburg and is now our favorite Buffalo Bill. That's great. Lorenzo, he's like Mr. Buffalo now. He could do whatever he wants. He's going to be the next mayor of Buffalo if he wanted to.
I bet
people
you
love him.
Anywhere he walks into, everything is like, Lorenzo, you want this? You want this?
Yeah.
You know, certain guys get to that status where everything is just free.
Yeah, well, but I think people really like him and regard him well. Almost everybody except you, it seems.
No,
I think most people like Lorenzo. I can't believe you have a beef with him. It's puzzling.
No, it's no real beef. You know, it's just something that we do. It's our relationship.
Okay,
it's how we deal with each other. You know.
Okay. All right. Hey, Twitter poll. We're kind of locking in on the Bills' matchup with the Oakland Raiders. What's the biggest key for a Buffalo Bills victory over the Raiders on Sunday? What do you think? What has to get done? 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, if you want to weigh in on that. Or on Twitter, right now, 46% of you say you got to finish drives with touchdowns this week. 37% say you got to control Oakland's offensive weapons. 16% say you got to run the ball well. Solid run game. 1% have something else in mind. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. James calling from, appropriately enough, Jamestown. Hello, James. You're on the air. James in Jamestown. James, Jimmy, Jimbo, Jim, Jimmy Jam.
Hey,
how you doing, James? What's up?
Doing well. I love the show, guys. I was glad you brought up Khalil Mack. I think the biggest key today, or for the game, is going to be Deontay Thompson. And I don't think enough people have been talking about him and how he's really helped Tyrod Taylor progress.
He had a good game last week. And I would think that they probably will actually focus on him, the defense, knowing what he did last week coming in here. You know, Oakland can tell that he's a guy that, you know, Tyrod looks to in certain situations. And, you know, I'm sure they know their history from Baltimore. So they're probably saying, you know what, if he starts to get some catches, you might even see him get double teamed.
Four targets, four catches last Sunday. Yes, go ahead, James.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. But also I wanted to see what you guys thought about Marcell Dareus and what he's been doing and maybe what his trade value would be in addition to an Anquan Boldin.
Well, the trade deadline is Tuesday, 4 p.m. The coaching staff will tell you, both Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier this week, that Marcell played pretty well against Tampa and is playing pretty well. And overriding all of this is his contract, which makes it virtually impossible to trade away. Not ruling it out, but I think it'd be a huge burden to trade him away and not have anything to show for that big chunk it will take out of your salary cap. So do I look for a trade for Marcell Dareus before Tuesday? I do not.
No. I don't think it's going to happen. And, you know, I think when you watch on film, he is playing well. Now, he's not playing like he did a few years ago where you had all the sacks and everything, but he's playing good enough. When he's out there on the field, he's playing good enough where the coaches are happy with what he's doing.
Yeah, so far, I think, or at least the last couple of weeks, they are. All right, Chris Brown has a chance every week to spend some time with the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott. They share a cup of coffee and talk about the upcoming matchup. It is Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. Time now for Coffee with the Coach.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown, along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, as the Bills get ready to host the Oakland Raiders on Sunday at New Era Field. Coach, thanks for being with us. So a big come-from-behind win this past week, an emotional, dramatic win. The emotions get high. How do you make sure your team can compartmentalize the success and those emotions and kind of move on to the next week?
Well, we certainly celebrate what we executed on the field on Sunday. That said, that's part of the process. You've got to move on in this league and move on rather quickly after about 24 hours and understand the opponent and the challenge ahead.
You've got another team with a lot of weapons coming in the Raiders on offense. Little nicked up in the secondary. I know some of those injuries you have are a wait-and-see kind of situation. My question for you is, when do you put the contingency plans in place in the course of the week? Do you wait until you know what the situation is, or are you kind of having guys take reps during the practice week in case they've got to be the guys that got to plug and play?
Well, we need to be efficient whatever it is we do and whatever our approach is, and so we do have to have contingency plans in place, and that takes time. It takes great communication also within the coaching staff, within our personnel department, and also amongst the players to know, hey, if this person goes in at this position, how does that affect the next player? So and special teams. So a lot goes into it. It's just another challenge that we'll face, and I'm sure it won't be the last.
I know people throw a ton of numbers at you all the time with statistics and whatnot. 29th on third down defense, the Raiders are. They're having a lot of trouble getting off the field right now. You guys are coming off a game where you converted over 60% on third down. I'm sure you probably don't get bogged down in the numbers as much as we do on the media side of things. Do you just worry about getting plays that you think are going to work against that defense, having the trouble they're having right now?
Well, third downs and extending drives on offense and then getting off the field conversely on third down defensively for us, that's big. And that leads to points and which leads to winning football games. So we have to get better in that area on defense than we were last week and then continue to improve in what we do offensively. And if it's 60%, great. If it's 70%, even better. Either way, we need to move the football, move the chains.
All right, very good, Coach. Now it's time for our fan question of the week, where you, the fan, get to ask Coach a question. We go out to our own Lauren Hall, who is out of the local Tim Hortons, who has this week's fan question.
Hey, Chris, we're at the Tim Hortons on Southwestern Boulevard in Orchard Park. We're with Bill. Bill, what's your question for Coach?
Good morning, Coach. Coach, I was wondering, in your short period of time here, is there any one young player on the team that's impressed you enough that you think will have a long career here in the NFL?
Okay, Coach, I know sometimes you don't like singling out guys, but do you have a young player in mind?
Well, you're right. I don't like singling guys out. In this case, I'll do that. Tre'Davious White, who had a big game this past weekend for us, I believe based on his DNA, his profile, the way he's played to this point in his career, should bode for a tremendously long and prosperous career in the NFL and hopefully as a Buffalo Bill for a long time to come.
All right, very good. Coach, thanks for the time. Good luck keeping this winning streak at home going on Sunday.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills. Are you ready, Donald, to play a little bit of NFL True or False?
Yes.
NFL True or False is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. This has come up in the last day or two. I read it yesterday. I think it's going to come up a little bit more. Ratings issues in the NFL. The ratings are down once again. In fact, here's the stat that's glaring to me. Let me find it. Where is it? Here it is. Ratings are down 18% in the NFL compared to 6 weeks, 7 weeks into the 2015 season. So in 2 years, the ratings are down 18%. That'll get your attention. What is the reason for it? Is it oversaturation, too many games? True, false? I say true. There's football, not just NFL football, but college football on all nights of the week, college football all Saturday long, even some Friday, and NFL games Thursday, Sunday, Monday. Too much football. That's why the ratings are down. I say that's true. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's true as well. I think, right now, we always talk about the thirst for football in this country, and, I think the NFL – college football, the networks, they've all tried to do their best to quench that thirst. But because of that, now you're starting to see people not want to watch as much, And then you obviously have certain games that people don't want to watch and primetime games and stuff like that. I think there are a lot of reasons. But, yeah, I do think that it's oversaturation. So I go true on that one.
Yeah, more on this in the days and weeks ahead. Here's one, true or false. The officials last night should have ejected Kiko Alonso, should have thrown him out of the game. You go first.
No, I go false on this one. We just talked to Lorenzo about how hard it is. I think the quarterback, if you decide as a quarterback that you want to run and you want to slide late, then you're going to get hit, you know. And I think it was a clean hit. It was hard for Kiko Alonso to do anything differently than he did. It wasn't like he led with his helmet. He led with his shoulder and his arm. So, no, he shouldn't have been ejected.
I think that's false as well. I think the appropriate penalty was assessed. I would not be surprised if there's a financial penalty as well levied on Kiko. I hope it doesn't get to, you know, any playing time missed, any game suspension. Difficult play, quick, you know, really quick play. And Lorenzo pointed out, and he's right, you know, Kiko probably had an aiming point at first to hit Joe Flacco that was going to be obviously below the shoulders. And when Flacco started sliding late, it was a late slide, that aiming point all of a sudden was the helmet. I don't know how you'd pull out of that.
Just imagine as a defensive player, you know that if you hit a quarterback a certain way, that you're going to get a flag, right? But then the quarterback becomes a runner, and you're running towards that guy, and you're like, okay, you're going to slide? No. All right, you're not going to slide. Now I got to go in and hit you. And then when I go to finally hit you and I leave my feet, you decide to slide.
Right.
You know, it's too late at that point. You know, no, he shouldn't have been ejected.
Finally, NFL true or false. The Los Angeles Chargers, whom the Bills will see in a couple of weeks, Chargers are playoff contenders. And here's the reason why you can make that argument. USA Today article, you know, Chargers handled the Denver Broncos this past Sunday. Before that, they got out of Oakland with a win thanks to a late field goal, the kind of game they were losing earlier on. And their first win came against the Giants. So the Chargers are playoff contenders, true, false? I say false. I don't think they are. They're in a fairly tough division. They've, you know, as I said, they got a field goal to win a game that they lost earlier this season. They beat the Giants, who are horrible, and a good impressive performance against Denver. But I don't expect the Chargers are going to be playoff contenders much longer, Donald.
Yeah, I'm going to go false on this one. I think they're in the hardest, toughest division in football. And because of that, I think they are the weakest team in that division. And so because of that, no, I don't think they are playoff contenders.
NFL true or false presented by – I'm sorry, I'm laughing at something else. I'm laughing at what's coming up here, which we all got a big kick out of today. It happened on the NFL Network. And by the way, NFL true or false brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. NFL Network telecast pregame show. I think it was pregame last night of the game between the Dolphins and the Baltimore Ravens. Steve Smith, longtime receiver, a longtime character in the league, kind of an abrasive personality. I think at least that's the image he likes to project.
Yeah.
He had an exchange last night on the air, live TV, an exchange with the Hall of Famer Michael Irvin, all centering around the slacks that Steve Smith chose to wear on the air. Listen to this. It's pretty incredible last night.
Steve, I gotta apologize. My wife loves you, and she got mad at me for messing with you. She's going to make me sleep on the couch if I mess with you anymore. So I'm not going to say anything about those pants you have on. I'm not going to say anything about those pants you have on.
You know what, Mike? I'm gonna let you know right now. When I come to LA, I'm gonna whoop your ass.
And you know what? Steve's wife is going to have a problem with you as well, Michael.
Oh,
so you're in the doghouse.
Don't hit me on the couch.
And your own wife. I'm going to just
whoop your ass when I see you.
She just needs to be on the couch. Yes. Yeah.
I ain't got no time for this.
Steve Smith, I ain't got time for this. If you could see the video, if you saw it last night on TV, he looked mad. He wasn't kidding.
No, he was dead serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his... You know, he's a type, he's like quick temper type of guy.
Yeah.
You know, and if certain people are sensitive, when you start to joke about them, they get sensitive about his pants on TV. You're going to make jokes about me on TV? You know what? When I come to LA, it's on.
Really funny, genuine moment last night.
You said it twice.
On the NFL
though,
Network. Right?
He said it twice.
Right.
That's hilarious.
Really funny. We're breaking here. We're coming back. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had an outstanding show, Donald, whether you know it or not. I know you know it. We had a great show. James Lofton, the Hall of Fame wide receiver from the Bills, was here. He's covering the game for CBS this weekend. Lofton talked to us. We asked him, because it came up this week, is he in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a Green Bay Packer or as a Buffalo Bill?
when I went in, there were some Bill stuff and there was some Packer stuff. But recently, they started making a T-shirt with all the guys on it. Thurman Thomas noticed that I was not on the Bills T-shirt.
Hmm.
He went to the Hall of Fame people. Now I'm on the Bills T-shirt. So I'm on the Packers T-shirt, and I'm on the Bills T-shirt. So Thurman has some sway with the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
James Lofton, who was in studio with us. Greg Cosell joined us earlier today, analyst and on-air analyst and executive producer of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime producer at NFL Films. Greg Cosell talked about the Bills and the progress they've made in their 4-2 start so far this year.
I don't look at the way they've won and how they played as a fluke. I think this team has played well. I think they've gotten very strong play overall from Tyrod Taylor. And I think that's a real, real positive. I think under Sean and Leslie Frazier, this defense has played really well. I mean, there's one player I was really excited to talk about today, and that's Milano. I think he's added an awful lot to their nickel package. I think he's a really good athlete. The interception he made last week at the end of the first half, I think, really speaks to the kind of player that he is.
5 seconds. Greg Cosell talking about the game. It's going to be a tough game for the Bills. They're going to need more of those breaks that they've been specializing in.
They will need those breaks. They're going to have to play a very good game. They can't afford many penalties. They can't afford to get behind the chains. They have to play well all game and finish with touchdowns.
I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistant today, our board op at Entercom was Brayton Wilson. Yeah, production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Homiter, Olivia Merrill, and Shelby Rush. Our producer, Jay Harris. Enjoy the game on Sunday. We're back here on Monday with the John Murphy Show at 12 noon on Buffalo Bills Radio.